What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 89 of Valuetown. I'm Chan Man V, and we've got an exciting day ready to go. Lots of big news today. I want to welcome Noxious. What's up, buddy?
Not much. Just closing out Battle Rite before we engage.
God, you're such a troll, man. Such a troll. What's up, Zalay? How are things going today?
Oh, it's a beautiful day. Upcoming balance changes, and I mean, what better news could I possibly have woken up to? I'm so excited to talk about it.
Absolutely. And Firebat joining us again and catching him last minute. So you guys probably didn't even know he was going to be on, but I tried to tweet out last second. So welcome, Firebat.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on the show, especially when there's something cool to talk about. Really hyped about the balance changes and all that sort of stuff. Feels like that Batstone might have actually made a difference, which is the whole goal of it. So I'm really excited and happy that that might be the case. Not saying that it is, just the possibility gets me all jittery inside.
Just own it. It's okay. Just say, hell yeah, we did it, baby. We did it.
I beat Blizzard. They're balancing games. They haven't even hired me. There we go.
Yeah, they had that job opening. You know, I'm surprised they didn't get an email about that.
They won't pursue you, and you'd probably have to turn down the salary anyway.
Well, it's why pay you when you're going to do it for free anyways, right?
Ah, true.
Yeah. I see how it is.
Yeah, that's the reason. No, so we're going to obviously talk about the big patch that was announced this morning. We got some other news, some news just even esports with a player that are friends of ours that joined a new team, and a new team getting into Hearthstone, which is kind of interesting too. Of course, we're going to talk about decks that we've been playing, going to be talking about events that happened this past week that some of these guys casted to, and we're going to do some Q&A at the end. You can post your questions either to Twitter, you can send them to me, at ChamMV, or you can post them in Twitch chat when we get to that section. Okay, so let's just start off with the big thing, which is the balance announcement, the upcoming patch that's going to be probably Tuesday, right? All right, so this is a lot of cards. Some that we were expecting in terms of cards that would be nerf if they were to come out with a nerf, and then some I would say that are pretty surprising. So why don't we start with the first one here, which is Rockbiter, actually going up from one mana to two mana. And what do you guys think of that? How much of an impact is this?
It has a huge impact.
Yeah.
makes a lot of sense to me. Anytime you change the mana cost of something by one, that's it's extremely dramatic. And I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, it's not just aggro shaman that wants Rockbiter weapon. Mid-range shamans typically play into them with an Alakir for their burst. Mm-hmm. And even without Alakir, Rockbiter is sort of just like in its own class for power level for these three damage removal cards. Like there's historically Dark Bomb, Quick Shot, Frostbolt. All these things are two mana, three damage. Rockbiter is one mana, three damage. Granted, you take some face damage with it, but using your life as a resource is like really powerful, like getting to cheat on mana. So it's not just burst that's getting nerfed. It's just kind of like bringing in line with what other classes have to do three damage.
Yeah, it opens the ability for a lot of the shaman players to start thinking about potentially playing Stormcrest or playing Lightning Bolt, like some of these other cards that they have for removal that they've kind of just sort of phased out because Rockbiter is just so good. And it really hurts kind of shamans, like maybe identification as like they get board control and then they snowball board control. Yeah, like that's their game plan, right? Yeah. So lowering their ability to do that is going to hurt them as a class overall. Maybe not super dramatically since you're just changing the mana cost from one to two, but definitely by a little bit, shaman's going to be less good at snowballing the board. So maybe shaman mid-range and aggro shaman might be a little bit less oppressive. And now you have a lot less to worry about just randomly dying out of nowhere against aggro shaman, which is what makes me the happiest about this nerf. Because when they have Doomhammer up and they're under the overload of Doomhammer, and I'm like, all right, well, they have four mana remaining because they just played Doomhammer. If they have Lava Burst Rockbiter, I'm dead. Now Lava Burst Rockbiter doesn't kill you. They can't just randomly hit you for 15 after fouring you in the face. 19 total damage over two turns, by the way, from turns 5 and 6.
And six can't
happen anymore. So they need to have a little bit of a slowdown there. So you have more time to develop some random taunts. You have more time to actually heal. You have a lot more outs against the inevitable Doomhammer, you're dead plan. So I really like that. And
it's true.
When I'm streaming Hearthstone and someone goes Doomhammer turn 5, and I'm like, well, they're just going to double Rockbiter and kill me. Yep. And they do. I'm like, why am I playing this game? So that is going to happen dramatically less, and so that's going to make me happier. And yeah, I'm super excited about that nerf.
It makes the game more interactive. What?
That, yeah, it actually great. Does. Like,
great.
One of the big things about this card, like the cost change. Like, one of my, I really thought they would change either Doomhammer or Rockbiter, right? Like, when they changed Force of Nature and everything, and they changed neither of them. That was like my biggest. I was really afraid that they would just never do so, but like they're taking a look at the core set is what I'm getting from this entire roster of cards. And Rockbiter is just like another lightning bolt in the class. So it's like they have this core set with four cards at one mana to deal three. I mean, it is a lot. And the idea of Rockbiter in their mind, I'm sure, was let's make a really cool card that synergizes with Windfury. I'm sure at first when they designed the card, their idea was let's buff a minion with Windfury, let it attack twice for, you know, six total instead of just the three. You could also do that with your Doomhammer. So they were excited when they made the Doomhammer, I mean, the Rockbiter a long time ago. But that's no longer exciting. It's just annoying. Like, it, when you stack it with everything they've got, it just gets to the point where the fantasy of getting, like, a Raging Worgen buffed up and, you know, rock biting it, like, that's not a thing. That's just not a thing. And I'm glad they recognize that this card, while keeping the combo value, just has to lose in, you know, just standalone power. Like, it was just too good even on its own, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Shaman never had that early power until, you know, the most recent era of cards and releases. So, yeah, I think you're right about Rockbiter and what it was originally intended for. But now, it's just like, it's crazy that Shaman has as many one drops as pretty close to like a Warlock, you know, that's just absolutely crazy.
And then Spirit Claws on top of that, and Maelstrom Portal on top of that. Like, some of the best early game minions and some of the best early game board control tools. And they're a class that relies on early game board to snowball with all of their cards building on their early game board advantage. So typically speaking, when you have the best early game board and then the best ability to snowball the early game board, you do pretty well. So I think removing one of those two mechanics needs to kind of be done. And I think they're accomplishing that slightly with Rockbiter. You know, Spirit Claws is also going to be less oppressive. Yeah, because you can't combo it with Rockbiter to get that four damage, killing four health minions as easily. Overload's going to be a lot more of a factor as far as removing things on the early stage because you have to be relying on Stormcrack, Lightning Bolt, or two mana Rockbiter. Yeah. So it's just the whole early game of Shaman for controlling the board is going to be totally different now. And that's going to cause them to be less snowbally and less just killing us as fast, I think.
Yeah, that's probably true. Totem Golems are a little safer too now, maybe early game than
maybe. Well, coin Totem Golem went down. Coin Totem Golem, you only have one mana afterwards, and normally you rely on Rockbiter being like, all right, now I kill your guy when you develop it. Now I can't.
That's right.
Now you have to bolt and overload your turn three, which again, kind of
suddenly your whole curve is just different with Shaman. Yeah. Coin Totem Golem might not even be a good play anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
It'll probably be pretty good.
I mean, it's still pretty good.
One plays. So, I mean, at least very, very strong one plays. You could still see it being.
I think Abusive Sergeant's probably shifting out of Aggro Shaman.
Out of Aggro Shaman, probably.
For favor of +1/+1 per totem.
Primal Fusion
or something like that, yeah. So
that was already pretty close to being just as good.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's going to be much of a change there. All right, so let's talk about one of the big ones. One of the Batstone bans, which was Teskar Totemic. Yes. And this is basically what everybody wanted it to change to, which was randomly summon a normal, like a basic totem instead of one of the crazy powerful ones.
Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how this took so long.
Yeah, like, me too.
When this card came out and people played with it on day one, people were like, all right, this should just be a basic totem. Like, come on, guys. This isn't fun for anybody. This kind of sucks. You're just getting lucky and winning, or people are getting lucky and winning against me. I don't enjoy this. And 7-8 months later, we've come to realize that as...
Well, what's funny is that, like, summoning a basic totem is still a good 3-drop. Because it's
especially the Spirit Claws.
It's 3-4 with a buff. You know, some kind of buffing, right? Or,
people in the chat are saying, let's make it a 3-3. I'm like, no. Are you delusional? Are you out of your fucking mind?
That's what I didn't understand. People wanted a 3-3. I'm like, guys, it's already a freaking good...
Nerf Shaman. It'll be okay. They're too good.
What the hell?
I mean, but that's still a very good card if it's a 3-3. So now it's like... It's still good, but it's not just extremely
you play it because
good.
It does a lot of things. First off, totem synergy, and Shaman is very totem synergetic. Doesn't matter how you build Shaman now. If you put Shaman cards in your deck, it'll happen to have totem synergy. That's how much totem synergies there are in the game. So it being a totem synergy card, extremely powerful. And then it's a spell damage synergy card as well, because it has the ability to increase your odds of getting spell power totem on future totem rolls, or just give you spell power totem on its current roll.
Yep.
So already you've worked with both of Shaman's core synergies that they have in the deck. Then on top of that, it works with the other synergy of Shaman, which is they're really good when they got a lot of things on board, because of Flame Tongue Totem, Bloodlust, all sorts of other things that just benefit you when you have board. So it works with all three of the main Shaman synergies at the same exact time, which is just lots of things on board, spell power, and totems.
And it's totems, the three angles.
Everything that you could possibly want in pretty much every sort of Shaman deck, all just at the same time as far as synergies go. So I think it's worth it to pay a little bit of a stat deficit to work with every single Shaman game plan all at the same time.
Well, and it's hard to say it's a stat deficit because you get two bodies with Flame Tongue, right? It's like, am I really paying anything?
Well, so
or am I gaining something?
I mean, you bring up a good point, because like the synergy, actually, that's one of the things I think they've done right with Shaman, just in general, is making up for power by synergizing with other cards in the class. And they've done that with, in a way, with Druid too. I'm not sure they've done it as good of a job as Druid, but they're doing it in other classes, and that's kind of why we've seen the rise of power in some of these classes. So like in terms of Tuskar Totemic, what if it was a 2-2? I mean, because we are getting the added benefit of all that synergy, plus I think just the 3-4.
That's a fencing code, bro. That's not.
I'm not playing 2-2 Tuskar Totemic.
Okay.
I think at that point, fencing is strictly better, right?
I don't know, but it certainly moves.
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah, fencing.
But you wouldn't be able to activate Inspire Mechanic.
Which is good.
That's true, actually. Oh, my God. Yes.
Thunderbolt balance.
You couldn't play Bran with that, though. But
I think the main point is here, it's not fun to randomly lose the game X percent of the time.
Yeah, of course.
Like, if you run the numbers, figure out the percent, you know, what is the percent my opponent goes Tuskar Totemic on turn 3 and it rolls a Totem Golem? And that percentage is way higher than you'd want it to be. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I'm pretty sure it's like above like 10%. Well, I mean, they have to have it on turn 3 as well.
Okay.
And so it comes out to somewhere in like the 10-11% range, I'm pretty sure.
That's
and
high.
when that's your percentage just to like lose the game instantly, because then you look at the win rate. What is the win rate of Shaman when they on turn 3 roll Tuskar Totemic, or play Tuskar Totemic and rolls Totem Golem against my deck? And then you're like, well, they win 85%, 90% of the time, somewhere upwards in those numbers. So 10% of the time, they win 90% of the time. That's a bad feeling. That's just like, and that's way too many games where you just automatically lose no matter what the decisions you make are. And we want to try and limit those as much as possible, because that's the definition of non-interactive, unfun gameplay, is just instantly losing no matter what you do on turn 3.
As bad as Totem Golem feels, it always felt worse for me when they got Mana Tide Totem.
Depending on which spot and against which deck,
it was so bad.
You had to waste some key removal on it, too. It's just like,
A lot of the Shaman Mirrors or Shaman versus Zoo sort of matchups, you would spend like 3 turns setting up the board in such a way that if you played Tuskar Totemic, your opponent didn't have anything on board. So if you did high roll, you would win the game. So there was some skill into it in the high end of like, you know, top legend versus top legend players. They would set up the board state for Tuskar Totemic and figure out like, all right, if I develop Spirit Claws here and just Totem here instead, then I can do this. And then I can get the board back. And then if I have the board, I play Tuskar Totemic. If I hit, you know, my 4 out of 7 for high rolls, then I win the game. And set themselves up in situations like that. So it was skill intensive at some points, but I don't think the added skill was really worth the deficit of just losing so many games randomly.
Thank God it's going away.
Yeah, there's no question.
It takes so long.
Go ahead, Zilly.
I think it makes. I was not at all surprised that it took this long. Like, I come from a background of having played World of Warcraft for however many years, and I'm just super used to Blizzard not caring about balancing. For the competitive scene, I always felt like they just didn't care about players like me at all. And so today is like such a wonderful and beautiful day, completely unexpected. It's like they do care about me. They want me to be happy. They want me to like their game. Thank you, Blizzard. Oh, I'm so grateful for these changes. And I think we can expect more of this in the future. Like, it's probably not just this.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Like, my big worry is, like, we just lived through an Undertaker scenario again.
Oh,
like,
wait, true.
Yeah,
we went through the exact same thing, because Undertaker took just as long, and it was the same problem. So my worry is that, you know, the next set comes out, and there's another problem card, and it takes another 7 months. And if that's the case, then, you know, it's nice for them to change things, but... I just hope that they take a more proactive approach to it, instead of just sitting on it for that long. Because like we see all the cards that were changed, right? None of them really are cards that are just came out of nowhere. Like from Karazhan, they changed something about cards that were very recent. No, they've been around for a while. Those cards have been probably looked at for a very, very long period of time. And they're changing those now. Now, like, if a card comes out in the next set, is it going to take another 7 months, or is it going to be, like, within the next month? How much data did they feel comfortable having before they make that call?
I think that's really what it is. Like, how much?
What was the response time for Undertaker? Like, how long was it?
Six months.
It was 6 months.
It
was a long time.
And the response time for this, was it shorter or was it longer? Like, is there a positive trend here? It was longer. So we're going on the decline.
It was almost a year, right?
Like, would expect...
When did this come out? This came out...
In TGT, dude, it's like forever ago.
Oh my god, TGT.
But the reason it wasn't that bad back then was Shaman wasn't impressive because Thing from Below wasn't around, so we hadn't seen that coming into action. So
when did Thing from Below come out then?
In the Whispers of the Old Gods.
Whispers of the Old
Gods.
So when was that expansion?
That was 6 months ago.
Five months ago.
That's a 1 month improvement. We're going to stop it there. We're just going to say they've improved the response time by 1 month, and we expect more great improvement in the future. Because that's what became a problem, right?
Hey, Kibler,
like, Totemic's been getting worse and worse. Like, at the start, there's Vitality Totem that was making it like a worse card, and now there's like Thing from Below making it better, and then Spirit Claws making it better, and Maelstrom Portal making it better because the spell damage synergy. Mm-hmm. Like, so Totemic's been getting worse and worse, and they kind of fixed it pretty quickly after it got really super bad recently.
Yeah. So I think overall they're improving the response time, and we can expect it to be. Hopefully the next one's 1 month faster, and then 1 month faster, and then 1 month faster. And we just have this linear, beautiful trend. And then eventually, they don't even need it anymore. They just need negative time to fix cards, and they just have them nailed pat, and they're out. Everything's balanced perfectly. They've understood everything. They've recreated the universe, and they've just transcended to a next level of Hearthstone being.
So now you actually pray the officer to get into heaven. Is that it?
So just playing devil's advocate, like in from the standpoint of them getting enough data, how much time do you think they should give players just giving players the ability to counter it themselves, you know, just figuring out solutions themselves?
There's no counter to it. They needed to do with Tuskar Totemic was look at the numbers, like do the math, figure out you win the game X percent of times when you play this on turn 1 out of 7. If you play this on turn 3, you win the game.
Yeah, but we know
that's
that,
not okay.
No, but like, we know that there's, you know, there's obviously different levels of play that play into whether they change cards or not, or don't change cards, right? And I think they, from the standpoint of the pro players, I think they're not very quick to change just to see if pro players can figure out, I don't know, any kind of even overpowered solution that can possibly be an answer to this, or if not.
I'm so it's all for thinking positively of ways in a tempo matchup to beat a turn 3-6-6 but like realistically
I'm trying.
Six on turn 3 in any matchup related to tempo is impossible to beat.
I mean, wait, we're talking about a 6-6 on turn 3 across two bodies, because like the one body part is also a big deal, because sometimes you can like slow it down if it's only one target, but when it's two of them and it just keeps going from there, like that's when it gets really obscene. So I don't know, man.
Talk about it in an aggro deck too, that's designed to, or it's either an aggro deck that's designed to, when they have board and get free damage, they kill you very quickly. Yeah. Or the other form is it's in a mid-range deck that's designed to snowball board and get huge benefits if they're ahead on board. So either way, if they have it happen in either of those decks, they're able to like take huge rewards out of it. It's not like just some deck that's just like Control Warrior. Control Warrior got a 3-mana 6/6. You'd be like, okay, I can stabilize from this, and it's fine. They got Brawls and Executes in their hand. But the mid-range Shaman and the aggro Shaman are just like, Doomhammer your face, you're dead. Like, they can really capitalize on it.
Yeah. All right, I won't try anymore.
I'll say one thing. I'll say one thing actually to join maybe the other side of like the argument is like, these changes, like if we look at the Shaman changes, they're obviously making Shaman weaker in a big way. But if you look at the other changes that were added, this also makes Shaman's worst matchups a bit better. Or Shaman's like better, like worst matchups a little bit weak, that is, against them. Because suddenly, you know, execute a 2-mana. Yes, it's not as good in like tempo deck, so you can't play it there. But Control Warrior also sometimes needs to aggressively try to get an execute on something you put down. Abusive Sergeant and Zoo being gone, even though it's still playable, does mean that if it gets rotated out, suddenly trading up is a little bit less easy. Zoo would probably still play it, even though it's like on the cusp of It doesn't trade nearly as well, but the idea is I don't think Shaman got crazily weaker with the changes.
Zoo doesn't counter Shaman anymore.
Not anymore.
There's nothing that's positive win rate against Shaman in the current meta besides maybe Freeze Mage.
Freeze Mage, but
then if you have Aggro Shaman,
But then
they might even ban Shaman.
Control Warrior.
He's got to ban it.
Like to some extent, and then if the mid range Shaman plays 100% perfectly, I think mid range Shaman is favored against Control Warrior.
Yeah,
For sure. But like the point is, like Aggro Shaman got weaker because you know Rockbiter doesn't give them easy wins. Tuskar can't win them the game, but the mid range list.
It's still super strong. It'll still bow down to our druid overlords, but it's really strong.
Probably,
yeah.
Probably sometimes, but I mean, with Yogg being nerfed, there's no more comeback mechanism, and like
it's still good. The druid deck is still really good. Too.
I think we'll talk about the Yogg-Saron thing a little bit later.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to Call of the Wild. So this is another card that people have been starting to say is or just complain about, and this is making Hunter very one-dimensional. Like, I mean, basically, we had Savannah Highmane that's already always made Hunter a mid-range Hunter pretty much the go-to build and hard to build something better. And then now you have Call of the Wild that completes that. And so it's really, really hard to get away from it. The only thing that we change is whether we use a bunch of secrets or we don't, you know. But outside of that, it's very hard to build a different one. So what do you guys think of they raised the mana cost 1 to 9 for Call of the Wild.
I think it's really good. I think Hunter has been crutching on Call of the Wild too much. I do think the current form of Hunter, without any other card buffs or new cards introduces, just blows. I don't think anyone should really play Hunter very much. Like it was really close to being in the competitive meta, as you know, there's been like the Warriors and the Druids kind of peeking around the corner and being in every single lineup. Then you're like, oh, you just throw in Nissoth Hunter and it makes some sense and fits the lineup. And now you're kind of more tempted, like, wow, I don't want to play Hunter anymore. So it's kind of sucks for the current iteration of the game. But I think in future expansions, it just opens up the window for Hunter to do more things and be less of this boring deck where it's like, did I draw Call of the Wild on 8? All right, I win. Did I not draw Call of the Wild? Oh, I guess I lose. Bummer. Rough game.
Yeah, so I like Ragnaros.
Hopefully opens some more decision making in Hunter's play style and deck building. And I like that.
Yeah, I want to see more tracking in Hunters. Give him some reasons to play that card. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Secret Hunter is using that kind of stuff really well.
Call of the Wild was a reason to play tracking.
Yep.
You guarantee to get it on turn 8, so, I mean, you could play tracking. But I don't know. Power cards are just not fun. Like, one big powerful card in the class that decides games, if you draw it, usually isn't that fun. At least for me. I don't think it is.
Yeah. It ruins so much the rest of the game. It's like, why don't we do these first 7 turns of it if this is what matters?
Yeah, it's just, if I have this, I win. If I don't, I lose. And then everything else is pretty much irrelevant. So that's why I'm not a fan of Yogg. That's why I'm not a fan of Call of the Wild. That's why I'm not a fan of, like, Cthune. Like, a lot of these sort of, like, all-inclusive, you build around them, and then you have them on time, you win sort of cards, I'm not a big fan of. And I think... I'm really happy to see them kind of recognize that with Call of the Wild and make that change.
What about Nissoth? How do you feel about that guy?
Nissoth is...
that's better.
I like Nissoth a little bit better just because you can play around it. Like, if you try to get Nissoth down on 10, that means you're aggressively playing Sylvanas on 6 and aggressively playing Karen on 7. And if either of those gets Hexed or Polymorphed, you feel pretty sad.
Yeah.
Or Freezing Trap. Like if you have to very aggressively set up Nissoth to get him by turn 10. It's, like, almost impossible, right?
Well, it doesn't kill you. It fills the board. It just fills the board state. And you can actually
remove it. If it does fill the board, it kills you.
Like, yeah, it kind of wins.
Well,
yeah,
if it wins,
if it gets full value. But
I mean, Brawlsby,
in order to get full value, it's very difficult. And yeah, in the control matchups, I guess you can beat it, sure.
But Noxious, what do you think? Call the Wild.
About Call the Wild, I'm just happy that they're finally... Because like one of the big things about Highmane Call was that it took you 2 turns to stabilize off Highmane. You needed turn 6 and turn 7 to just stabilize. And if you did... Then right now, turn 8, they still came up with like something else to put down. So that's another 2 turns of trying to remove the board, and then by the time you're usually dead. So just the extra turn you get between Call of the Wild and Highmane being fully gone is usually, I think, the extra time you need to possibly come back. And one of the things I like about that is that Hunter will be trying to play Ragnaros. Like, I want to see if Secret Hunter comes back, or, I mean, crops up more that is as a result of that, because... You're 8 with Rag in that deck if you play like the curator type list, even though it's not you know, necessarily the best possible deck. It's definitely one of the more interesting ones. And it's got a bit more, I don't know, like nuance to it than just typical mid-range, I find.
Like the Strife Crow deck, huh?
Yeah.
What is it?
The Dragon's Day.
The LPS
list. Oh, no, tournament.
Yeah, that was definitely interesting. They just need to... They need to change to some of the other Hunter cards. Just make them better. Because I was looking through all the classes, and I was just like, you know what? I think Hunter has the worst cards, actually.
Yeah, well, in Hearthstone, it has to be because of the hero power, right? Like, Hunter too many good cards, like, because if they have good removal, then they can consistently get board control. If Hunter consistently has board control, then they can push far enough ahead that they can hero power a bunch during the game and just deal too much face damage too quickly, then every deck's going to need taunts and heals. And if every deck needs taunts and heals, then that's going to shape the metagame and be really oppressive. So I think just the nature of how Hunter works, if they have board control, they're oppressive pretty much always. You're going to need heal in every deck at that point a lot of the time.
I mean, listen to what you just said. You just said that, oh, we should just leave it then. Like, we, you know, just have Hunters have shitty cards.
I mean, I think it's totally fine.
I think it's okay.
Really?
I think it's totally fine for Hunter.
It doesn't have to be garbage. I think that's like...
Not total garbage, but I mean, like better than what Priest is currently, I would hope for. But, you know, you can't balance on... Like, balancing nine classes is downright almost impossible. Like, I don't know if you've tried to balance nine different things all at the same time. There are different archetypes. Like, look at every, like, competitive game ever that doesn't have, you know, even balance. They have, like, three classes a lot of the times, or four max. Like, you look at, like, Warcraft.
What about Dota 2?
Dota 2
has, like, 100-something.
Yeah, 100 characters.
But Ice Frog is a god.
Like,
he makes changes.
Championships.
And he makes changes. Ice Frog, like, not only understands...
But that is way different than of cards, right? Like, that's one champion.
There's, like, 100 champions, and they almost all get used.
Yeah, but how many skills does a champion have compared to how many
anything about
class
that.
Has, right? Like a champion's got, like, what, 4 or 5 skills?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And now a class has how many cards?
There's too many variables.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah. I mean, I know what you're. You're saying, Firebat. It's just that if you're saying that you should keep a bunch of trash cards in a class just because of the hero power, then the problem is the hero power. It's not
is the hero power and its ability to kind of change the meta if it's able to be able to consistently get board control by having good cards. And we've seen that kind of in earlier expansions and later spots, like with Undertaker Hunter being super, super oppressive. And then every deck kind of had to change and adapt to that, even if they weren't playing, you know, against that much they needed to, just because they would just always lose to just like just getting Hunter hero powered over the top after the Hunter had early game board control.
Yeah. Fair enough. I just wish there was just some change. Because even with Priest, I think Priest is like a bad class right now, power-wise. But at least Priest has some interesting cards that...
Like, you know, Purify.
Not Purify, okay. That can be played potentially in the future for design-wise. I think Hunter, there are a lot of cards that I just can never see being played.
Like Multi-Shot.
Explosive Shot.
Stable. I mean, like, they're like all these, even like Confessed and Ball of Spiders, and I mean, there's a lot of cards that are just
spiders.
Like
Ball of Spiders is so bad. Spiders.
That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of those really cards. I mean, King Crush.
Like, why wasn't
that
like three or four mana? Like, why is that six?
Well, three would be a sick card.
Yeah, it would be sick. Yeah,
but it
like,
would at least
six is also like
like six is way too much.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, six.
Because they don't drop from their deck, so it's still more fair.
You're not playing. Would you play it at four?
Yeah, I think it's probably really good at four.
Yeah, you can pair it with Tundra Rhino too for that sick three burst.
What's nice about it playing at four is that it would at least entice you to play a little bit of a slower Hunter than just something that like curves hard on board every single turn.
Control value Hunter, because that would
more
be
a value Hunter than control. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You'd have like a card draw option for just pure value that you just threw in your Hunter deck.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would be pretty cool.
Okay, well, why don't we move on? So this is another old card, or a card that's been around in the base set or whatnot. So Execute's been, again, raised in mana cost from 1 to 2. And this card, you know, we've said a few things about this card just over time, but I wouldn't say that there's been a lot of complaints about Execute. It's just we've always known that it's crazy strong. But this has been pretty much an iconic card to the class. So, you know, raising it to 2, I don't know. How much does that actually hurt? As a lay, I'll let you
say a lot.
Yeah. Slay, why don't you start?
A mana is a lot, and it hurts it a lot, and I'm a little bit sad because I do love me some Warrior and all that, but I could definitely see how this would be a positive change for the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think about decks like Tempo sad, Warrior, man. Patron yeah. Warrior, all of these random tempo decks that use Execute that aren't a control deck, and they use it for the purpose of gaining tempo. All of those decks get significantly worse with this change. Control Warrior, not as much as of like an impact, just because during an average Control Warrior game, you're going to hang about 50 mana. So you're totally fine with Execute costing 2. But all of these sort of like the Patron decks, then the Temple Warrior decks, and all of that sort of stuff, the Pirate Aggro Warriors.
Pirate Aggro, yeah. Some of those there. Had Execute.
Or the Dragon Warriors, the Temple Warrior to Dragon Warriors that use Execute. All of those decks significantly hurt for mana. Like, you never hang a mana with any deck that has tempo in the title. You try and just use 100% mana efficiency, and since they're using Execute, that's just going to ruin their ability to execute a minion plus develop a strong minion. So now they have to execute a minion plus develop a mediocre minion, and now suddenly Dragon Warrior is going to be a lot less oppressive, and I think that'll be pretty healthy for the game. I think it'll make Warrior more use Execute in control-y decks rather than having the ability to use it in control, tempo, aggro, mid-range decks. So I think it's a lot better for the game, and it will hopefully reduce the amount of Warriors. Because right now, I'm really frustrated on ladder when I play against a Warrior, and I don't know if it's control, mid-range, aggro, pirate, dragon, combo, anything until like seven turns in,
yeah, when they play.
Oh, that... So now Execute's going to tell you. Like, I guess
limiting the viability of the other archetypes, I think, is good for Warrior. They have too many archetypes.
For sure.
So I think limiting the viability of their tempo archetype is very good, because there's so many classes right now that have a tempo archetype, the tempo mid-range archetype. Do we really need Warrior to also have a tempo mid-range archetype, or can Warrior just be the control class? Like, why does it need to have every single identity and...
And be represented across the board, basically.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, like, let's have Warrior be the controls, Druid can be the tempo, and, like, sort of map it out that way instead of just having... Like, you want two archetypes maybe viable for every class.
Yeah, maybe two
but
every class.
Maybe not seven, you know? Let's just...
Oh, you're breaking my sideboarding like idea here. Charge. All right, so charge.
But like one
here.
Of the big things too is that like this card fits in one of the, because like there's very few pure control decks in the game, right?
Yeah.
There aren't that many of them, and the thing is, in order to be a good control deck, you need like a lot of ingredients, I guess. Like, you need cards that are good early and late. You need cards that are good against like beatdown stuff, like well, just let's say Hunter or Shaman, as well as stuff that is also good versus the late game minions. You need to be able to survive combo decks. Like, you need all at once. You need to have everything at once.
Need tank up.
And they have to be cheap, too. You have to have enough health to
can't
survive
do
against combo
that.
Decks. But it's true. Like, you need all these ingredients together. And Execute was one of those cards that enabled the control archetype more than anything else because it was so cheap.
Yeah.
I just hope that it doesn't become like a new Shatter. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think it will. I think it will still be Control Warrior.
Right.
It's like, easier to damage than to freeze,
yeah,
right? Like,
there's
that's just
no
you
difference
can tell.
In Control Warrior, from my opinion.
It'll see a lot of play Control Warrior still. 4 mana 7/7 goes up in value,
up, yep.
So that'll be fun. But
I
still think Execute's a good card. I think you're playing two of it in your Control Warrior every time. It's just, I think it's questionable if you're putting two Executes in your Dragon Warrior. I've seen a lot of people cut one already. I think you might be cutting definitely one, maybe even two from like tempo Dragon Warriors. Like, it's just not.
It's funny
that
because Execute a two makes Crush look more appealing from a while back.
Okay.
Remember that card?
Crush.
No, but like I'm thinking about that, right? Because Crush was just irrelevant because you just looked at Execute, you're like, this card is absolute shit. Like, I have Shield Slam and Execute. But if you put if you put that change back when Crush was around,
Crush was in standard. Yeah, I could definitely see
card,
like,
yeah,
it's like Crush in Patron or Crush in your tempo decks.
So it's just kind of interesting that
because it's
like,
three mana, you don't have to trigger the if you have an injured minion sticking. But the odds of having an injured minion sticking around is still like pretty low.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
maybe.
Especially that early. I mean, it really depends on the state of like when in the game too. Okay, let's move on to charge. And okay, so this isn't just a one mana increase. So this was actually a mana decrease, but they also changed the text on it, which is give a friendly minion charge. It can't attack heroes this turn. So charge has been going through multiple iterations over the, you know, just the history of Hearthstone. And we're back to, you know, a low costing card, but now you can't there's no buff, and you can't attack anything except for minions now. So I don't know. What do you guys think of this? Is this completely killing this card, like Warsong Commander style, or are we going to see this in some kind of capacity?
I think it's a Warsong Commander style nerf, but I think it's very much an improvement to the card. Like, it makes a lot of sense that they're freeing up design space. Like, you can't let people charge minions at the face for lethal. Like, it's, they don't like those style of decks. Well, right,
you can, just not in the core set. Like, make it an expansion. This expansion, we're going to charge things at your face, and you're going to die. And the next expansion, you know, it'll rotate out and be totally fine. But in the core set, charging things at your face and having Worgen Warrior be a deck forever, because isn't Worgen also a core card?
Yeah.
Like, that deck would just exist forever. That would just always sometimes show up in the meta and be a thing. So I really like the change.
And there's always the threat of there's random, also like Arcane Giant.
Yeah.
Right? Arcane Giant, Inner Rage, Faceless Charge, that kind of thing. So it's not just the Worgen Charge. Charge plus X, always a threat. So they gave it sort of a Warsong Commander style nerf, but they did a much more elegant nerf than Warsong Commander, right? Like, they made the card not just 100% unplayable garbage, it's a little bit interesting. They reduced the mana cost. They gave it something to think about. Maybe you can charge a Sylvanas and really blow your opponent.
Well, is this an arena? Maybe an arena buff for the card versus what it was before? And maybe just being able to get tempo to some of your bigger minions? I don't know.
I'm not an arena specialist, but typically arena's all about value, and this card provides zero value. So it's like provides you tempo swing, which just isn't that relevant in arena a lot of the times. It's more just about, you know, having one more card left in your hand at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay. Well,
I think it's probably unplayable, but it's
I mean, that's the thing. Is there any application for this card right now that you guys can even think of? Like, I know Noxious tweeted the Magnetor,
but I mean, that's the obvious one, right? Like, Magnetor Alpha, but like Zilly mentioned, the whole damage. Kill your own Sylvanas, yada yada. one of the things that, well, maybe it's better depending.
No,
but
it could be better.
It should be worse.
I mean, against Shaman, it could be fun. I guess, you know, you target the totem and splash the actual minions. You know.
Yeah. Well, if they misplace, if they have a Stone Claw mid, like in the
middle. Yeah, they have like a Stone Claw. Like, that was the thing in if you ever played Duelist, like that was a huge placement error that you could punish people on. Is you give the what's that class? The green lizard dudes.
Yeah, frenzy units.
Yeah, you're the frenzy unit, and you just farm them with your green lizards with frenzy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the names in that game are too complicated for me. They're all like 8-letter
lizard
long,
dudes.
Like,
it is
lizard
true.
Dudes.
It is true.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we move on? Oh, you have the last thoughts on
that? But I was just gonna say, like, the change to charge is, you know, we mentioned how it prevents cancer from occurring as just like having this. Because the thing with Worgen OTK that I hated was how it kept every single control deck but Warrior in check. Mm-hmm. Like, every single deck
but Warrior. Freeze Mage was totally
Freeze Mage
fine.
Still does.
They just, like, Ice Block and lol.
Yeah. Like, it was just kind of too much because it also kept Freeze Mage in check.
Really?
Right? Like, if you play it, then it still is usually the better OTK, except against maybe the swarmy decks. But I like that they've added this card that can actually make cards to work around with. Because the old charge was basically, well, I want to win the game right away, so let me find the cheesiest, most, like, highest damage output. Whereas now this one-cost card is easy to weave in just an interesting combo. Like, we laugh at Magnetor Alpha, but they could come up with an actual interesting mechanic, which is just good with a charge minion that hits minions.
It's going to have to be really good, though, the actual, like, combo, because it's going to be a two-card combo, or you're going to have a really cycle-oriented deck with some sort of other OTK finisher, just because you can't include enough cycle to just get two for one yourself very casually all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's my issue with that whole using the charge thing as a combo, unless the minion somehow survives after the fact and then picks up additional value, because two for one in yourself while not having card draw in a real
I don't think it will be a two for one. That's the idea, right? Is they would have to print a card that either, like, when it dies, it does something super good for you. I don't want to go Dresdeed route because that's a bit excessive, but like the point would be that you get something back out of it instead of just losing the minion.
I can definitely see it being eventually, I guess, useful, but you could say that hypothetically for Warsong Commander or just any other card in the game as well, though.
Well, yeah, that's
Warsong. That's always Warsong Commander takes a lot more cards, I think.
Right now, it does.
Charge. I could just make one card per charge, and it could potentially be
okay,
usable.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to Abusive Sergeant. So Abusive Sergeant was actually a stat change. They lowered the attack from 2 to 1, and everything else is the same. So a lot of people were, you know, like, I think commenting back when Lepronome was changed, why Abusive Sergeant basically still has something very similar to that.
Abusive Sergeant was basically just a better Lepronome.
Yeah.
And then they were like, all right, we're going to nerf Lepronome. And then everyone was just like, what? What?
What happened?
So yeah, it makes a lot of sense that they caught back up with that, that out, figuring out that Abusive Sergeant was just better than Lepronome, and now we've nerfed that as well. So makes a lot of sense to me.
Yep. I think the card's not that good in this metagame because the metagame's so hostile to the card, but the card is, like, on its own very strong, and I think it still fits in Zoo even at a 1-1, and it might see play elsewhere, and I think it just makes a lot of sense to nerf it. Like, yep, should have happened a long time ago. Glad it happened now.
Yeah. That being, like, said, I don't think the Abusive Sergeant is in any Tier 1 decks at the moment. Like, it's not in... Like, Zoo's not a Tier 1 deck. I don't think the Tier 1 version of Aggro Shaman plays Abusive Sergeant.
Yep, I think so. I think you're right.
Like, the Tier 2 old version of Aggro Shaman plays Abusive Sergeant, so, like, I think it's just mainly in, like, Tier 2 and Tier 3 decks and isn't, like, a big highlight card, and I think a lot of the nerfs didn't really hit the Tier 1 decks that hard. They mainly hit just Tier 2 decks, but they're the Tier 2 decks that people don't want to see anymore, that they're just, like, not fun to play against. People don't want to see Zoo anymore. People don't want to see Aggro Shaman anymore. So it's more of just, like, a from a playability stance of the game, and also changing the core set to clean it up a little bit for future expansions is kind of, like, what people or what the team was really doing with these nerfs.
Yeah, which is good. You know, it's, again, it just reaffirms that they are still looking at a bunch of different cards, not just the new cards that a lot of us are complaining about. And there are a lot of cards that we just have forgotten, or we've just become so accustomed to them that we just stop complaining about them, you know. And there are some cards that are still that still need to be changed, I think, even in addition to these. So it's good that they still have that in their pipeline for sure. All right, the big one. So Yogg-Saron finally getting a change, and there have been, I don't know, there have been, like, I don't know how many proposed changes to Yogg-Saron, and this one was definitely one of them, and overall I think it's a pretty elegant one. So what's changed is the battle cry now is cast a random spell for each spell you've cast. Is, I mean, actually, I think everything's the same. It's just they changed how what happens whenever Yogg-Saron dies. Yeah. So all the spells stop when he dies. And he dies.
When he returns to your hand as well.
Or if he's silenced.
Yeah, silenced.
Or if he's transformed.
Yeah.
Basically, if Yogg stops being like a healthy dude in play, he stops casting spells.
And that's consistent with some of the other interactions. Like when Sivana steals him, right? Then all of a sudden, a lot of the spells go the other direction. So it's more along the lines of that. So it makes a lot of sense. What do you guys think?
Praise Jesus.
Praise
everything. Oh, it's so beautiful. Plus the overload now sticks, right? So it's like, I don't think we have to worry about seeing this in tournaments anymore. I think it's a great change to the card, and it does retain the card's initial goal of being like a fun casual player card where you can really, you know, turn a game on its head, do some crazy stuff, but they weakened the card enough that I don't think we have to worry about seeing it in tournaments. So I'm so happy about this.
Yeah, I'm very happy as well. And this, they actually nerfed it a lot faster than I thought they would, because originally I didn't think they were going to nerf it at all. They seemed pretty well on that stance that Yogg is fun, we love Yogg. So I'm glad to see that there's actually some change implemented to it. And if you compare it to Undertaker, right, like Noxious was saying, that took like 7 months to get changed. Old Gods was only out 5 or 6 months ago. So improvement on the change rate.
Wait, wasn't it... Noxious and Zalay, were both of you guys that thought that they were not going to change it? And
yeah, I thought they were going to change it. I'm
actually,
so
me and
glad
RDU thought song. They were going to change it. Yeah, exactly.
No, I thought they were going to change it.
Oh, you thought
RDU
they were going to
change
it.
Did not. I mean, RDU
I didn't think they
well
were going to change it. I thought, like, every time I've read about Yogg from a Blizzard standpoint, it's always been like, we love Yogg. Yogg is our baby. Please stop making fun of it. This is everything that we love. Praise Yogg, hallelujah. It was like there was some secret religion in the Blizzard community just bowing down to Yogg on a daily basis.
I know what the
religion is. It's got a shrine in there with like...
Yeah, that's what I envisioned every time I read a Blizzard post about Yogg. I was like, this shrine must be badass that they have Yogg at their company. So I'm really glad that they changed their mind with it and actually changed
it. The most crafted legendary in Hearthstone.
Oh, easily.
It is.
That's what they reported on it. And if we translate that into, you know,
dollars
dust for packs, I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah,
it does.
That's insane.
It's a few million dollars.
They probably made a lot of money off of Yogg, and probably enough to supplement the shrine and more. So, you know, they're getting huge value out of it.
Now we can change it.
Exactly.
Now that everyone's already, they've probably looked
they've
at the
already
numbers,
cashed in.
Looked at the player base and been like, all right, 99.9% of players have crafted this card. All right, so yeah. Now we can change it.
Now
yes, screw it.
Now
we've
Dr. Boom.
We've detrimented the competitive scene enough with this and profited out of it as much as we can possibly get. We've really milked them for it, and they're still alive and kicking. So gotta give a respect to the competitive scene for that. So since they're still alive, I guess we'll just change it now.
We dumped enough chemicals in the ocean. Fish really, really suffered for it. But they still have a population. Let's just stop right now.
Well, let's stop. Maybe let them reproduce. Will live. I don't know. And we can do it again in a few years.
Well, they only get a fourth of the dust back. Yeah, so they can't buy it.
It's fucking evil.
Legend, exactly.
You can't even. I don't even think you can disenchant him, right? Because he has the same effect. One thing that they mentioned though is
really,
it's not changed. It's not effectively changed. It's the same effect. But like one of the things that they mentioned,
they make it so you can actually disenchant him for dust. Otherwise, that's pretty sellout. If they nerf him in a way that doesn't change the cards after making everybody craft him, that would be some bullshit right there.
That's true. Yeah.
But like they mentioned, they want to add the overload right to the player who plays the card as a quote unquote bug fix. But like if they do that, I want them to also let its combo spells combo, because like if you're going to be the one who's considered having played the spell and get overloaded, then I think you should at least get the combo benefit.
So you do, right? Like head crack?
You have to play a card beforehand to then combo the Yogg, and then Headcrack, Eviscerate, all that stuff will combo.
Yeah,
I saw I was casting and a player didn't understand that and played Yogg and a Headcrack went off, and then they were assuming Headcrack came back to their hand, so they were assuming it would cause them to mill a card, so then they just Moonfired the face, and then Headcrack didn't come back, and they just wasted a Moonfire and didn't have Lethal with Malagos.
Oh yeah, I saw that. It was like the one Moonfire.
Sitting there casting, my god, he's throwing the game!
Yeah.
Sort of stuff happens with people not understanding how Yogg works. It's such a complicated card, it's really difficult to understand all the intricacies of it.
Dude, can you imagine getting locked? If they did that, get Lock and Load in the very first card, and all of a sudden you're freaking out.
You know what's great? If you
burning cards
purifies himself, you've literally memed yourself. Like after the expansion, after the patch, that
awesome.
Is. If he silences himself, he stops casting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be the best moment. Competitive play, Yogg is played, purify hits.
Guaranteed, somebody will have a video of that in the next 24 hours of him getting purified, and then nothing happening after that. But no, I actually am very happy with just how they did it. Yeah, I think it's really elegant in the way they did it, because you know we don't actually know exactly what the stats are like. You know, I think off the bat as to like how many, what's the average number of spells Yogg will cast now? I mean, I know that Yogg dies, very, very many times, a very large percent of the time, Yogg either dies or gets silenced or changed or whatnot whenever I cast Yogg. But I wonder what the average spell would be, because a lot to do with Yogg was just the more and more spells that were casted, you know, obviously, depending on the state of the board, too, the more benefits, like it just continually to increase or get closer to be benefiting the person that casted it or played Yogg. So it'd be cool if it was like an elegant way for them to just basically limit Yogg's spells to, you know, cast four, you know, or something like that. That'd be really cool.
Like from their calculations is balanced enough that it's like, okay, the guy might, you know, summon Call the Wild and then do a few things and then kill his own Yogg. Like on average, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing is like the order of spells already matters so much with Yogg, right? Like right now, if you play Yogg, the order in which your spells happen matters. Because if you get Call the Wild, Call the Wild, and then Nether, you're fucked. But if you go Nether, Call the Wild, like there's a huge difference in the outcome. And it's going to matter even more after the change to where if your Yogg does stupid shit at the wrong time, it's going to feel much, much worse.
Yeah.
I hope Yogg doesn't see competitive play.
I agree.
Yes.
I
really do. That is
praise Blizzard.
Something I've been really passionate about. You know, Batstone was going to ban Yogg in every format, and that was kind of what was making it hipster and cool. So now I got to figure out something new. Yeah, I got to rechange my whole plan here, because no one's going to play Yogg anyway, hopefully. So now I don't even need to ban it. So at the same time, I really hope it doesn't see any play, and I hope this nerf takes it into the ground, no competitive play. But at the same time, if it does see competitive play, I'll be happy because I'll have something to ban again, which will make my tournament cool. So I'm not good either way with it. But I'm really excited that they, you know, responded to a lot of the things the community's been saying and actually made a lot of changes, made changes to Yogg, cleaned up the core set a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of stuff that kind of needed to be done to make Standard more real. So I really like it.
True.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank God we're not going to see it on the BlizzCon stage. Oh my gosh, I was like so like afraid of that and how that would come across if we had just a bad Yogg moment. That would have been terrible. So
yeah,
thankfully that's not going to happen. And kudos to Blizzard for that. All right, that's going to be it, guys. Right, that's it for the cards. So really really good day in Hearthstone. And even though that is unfortunate that a lot of the top decks aren't going to be changed, just because it won't be as big of a meta swing as I guess you'd kind of like sometimes when you have these type of nerfs. But again, like you said, there's a lot of just annoying decks that we just don't want to see anymore gone. So definitely good. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about let's see. Okay, so there was a blue post here by Ixar2, and I thought this was going to be the main thing that we were at least from Blizzard that we were going to talk about. That he ends up talking about a few things, mostly just Rogue, really just the direction of Rogue, and then a few things about card balance, Randomonium, and then even just like the addition, like people requesting stat features added to Hearthstone, you know, just being able to see that. So you guys get a chance to read this, or? I think Firebat maybe last minute, so I'm not sure you got a chance to see it or not.
I think I read it, but then I forgot about it because of all these changes.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Like, I definitely read all that happened this week. All I know is these changes.
Okay. So let me bring these up.
In a nutshell, like one of the big things is like so one of the topics he tackled was the direction of Rogue. That was one of the big things.
Yeah, that's
like,
a big
one. Return to more of a Miracle Rogue-esque style, like style, while still keeping. Like a flow of Burgle-like cards or Swatch Burglar to where people can make that fun thief deck happen. And he also mentions like the whole changes about cards and how they communicate those with the community. Do they feel like they want to be more open about the process of changing cards, like what they're trying out, right? Because like they tell us like the end result of, hey, this is what we're doing with these changes, but they never tell us while they're changing cards, here are these, you know, 20 versions of this new Rock Biter we've got. These are all the ones we're trying out internally. And then people can maybe discuss those, you know, possible versions to provide input or whatever. What we get is just the end result, and it takes months sometimes. And I think this is one of the few things that I'd like to see more of is transparency as far as exactly what they're discussing, or, you know, more details as opposed to just saying, we're looking at this card. Well, how are you looking at it? Like, I think even if they end up never implementing a one mana rock biter that can't target a hero, even if they never end up implementing it, if they tested it, it would be nice to know that they have.
Are you, just, you're saying like telling
that would be pretty cool.
The public, like you just everybody, yeah, or just like okay,
yeah. If they just made a Reddit post saying we're testing all of this random stuff, then people that are complaining on the internet about why does it take so long for new cards to come out, why does it take so long for all of this, like us right now being like, why are these changes taking so long? Like, they're great, but we should have had these 4 months ago. And then we see all of the work that they're doing, and we can discuss and work along in kind of like tandem with that and post our views and our comments, and the community gets more involved with it. I think that would be great for helping sort of a more established competitive scene and more respect for the Blizzard's development team all at the same time. Because all of the competitive players would then be like posting their comments and their analysis on these changes and get more involved with the community that way. A lot of people would be like, wow, the development team's really busting their ass. This looks really cool. I really support this. This is awesome. I can wait a few months for them to test all of this random stuff out. Yeah. And so I think as a community, we would be a lot closer if there was more transparency in those things like that, not just talking about.
Like, I think I don't want to know that there's like, I don't want to know what the next expansion brings. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. Really just card changes and balance changes. That's maybe the stuff I'd like more transparency about. Kind of comment about Ixar's stuff.
Got to agree with what Firebat just said, but also I want to add that I can understand Blizzard's reluctance sometimes to be more open, because I've seen sometimes when they talk about stuff, they get kind of like some backlash. Like, there's some comment made about like maybe there's a better priest deck out there that players haven't discovered yet, and then all of a sudden it's 3 weeks of unicorn priest memes, right? And so like
that was fun.
Sure.
I thought that was in good humor. I was one of the big proprietors pushing that meme.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean it was fun. I agree, but it was also like Blizzard was communicating with us, and we kind of like slammed them for it, right? So I can understand why they're reluctant to walk into that again and more often.
That's not transparency.
That's way lower scale of transparency, though, we're talking about. They're just like, hey, guys, maybe Priest is good. And we're like, okay, thanks. Like, that's not really transparent at all.
Which is why people mocked it so much, right?
Yeah, okay. It was like the lamest attempt at communication ever. So that's why people were mocking.
It's like a rhetorical question. Somebody comes in there with like,
is there a good Priest out there?
There's nothing.
I mean,
you want more.
Like, come on.
So the one thing about being just totally transparent, and you said like, yeah, I don't want to know anything that's going to be coming out soon, but essentially you are if you were releasing new cards. So I mean, with any nerfs and stuff, I understand that. I totally get that. If they're more transparent about that, but new cards, I can see why they don't, because they want the whole surprise elements.
Yeah, the surprise element of new cards should stay. Like when you open your first packs for opening new cards, it should be awesome.
Yeah.
So
I don't want to see what they make.
I definitely think like keeping the new cards secret is fine, and I think honestly they could keep it more secret. Like a lot of the sets that we've had in the past, they've like shown every single card of the set before the set even comes out. They could show half of the set and then have the other half of the set just, you discover them when you open packs, and that would be really cool as well.
I think that would be sweet.
The problem with data mining is the problem, because like Curse, like let's say all the guys who do any data mining just have the build available, and that's why Blizzard is forced to spoil everything.
They have to spoil it.
Oh, that's a good
point. These websites
have to spoil it first, sure. Yeah.
So they'd have to release the build on the same day.
And then that would cause like crashes and too many problems. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I understand why they
agree with you.
Yeah.
It really sucks.
They're forced to. Goddamn data miners.
Well, I mean, with League of Explorers, it was pretty quick, right? Did they show us all the cards like that week before everything was... Did they show every card at BlizzCon? I forget.
Well, you had access to them online right afterwards, I think. Like, it was
but that was leaked, right? That was like a big accidental leak or something that all of them were online. But I don't know,
man.
I kind of remember it being leaked on Reddit or something like that. But I just forget if they made
leaked.
It available.
Yeah,
to
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
All I know is like there are ways to get those builds data mined before... Yeah. You can technically see them, and that, as a result of that, Blizzard is forced to keep pace, which is why I like League of Explorers release so much, because they told us it was coming out, and I didn't have time to get bored of looking at the cards already without playing with them. It was just like they felt fresh when they came out, because it was so quickly after the announcement and the spoiling of them.
Right. So I mean, we're talking kind of generally about, you know, just I guess XR posting here or whatnot, but let's talk about specifically with the Rogue. What do you guys think about just Burgle being the type of archetype they're trying to push a little bit more? Talk a little bit about Bladefur here too, as just AoE potential or whatnot, but really they're trying to push that type of Rogue, which I don't know, is a little bit more of a greedier Rogue, and I don't know, maybe they'll have more ethereal, you know, just the card, like the new ethereal card. I don't know. I personally don't like this type of Rogue. If you're going to steal, I don't like stealing from class, because there's so many cards that you can, there's potentially any card from the class, which is a lot of cards that they could potentially be holding in their hand. And I mentioned this on previous episodes with Mage too, that I just don't like that unknown aspect as to what cards it could possibly be. If you're going to steal, why just do it like Thought Steal. Just have them steal straight from your opponent's deck. And have that be
the same class across. Yeah, but it's too much. It's like
even
an overlap, right?
Is still like it's too hard to predict what the cards are. Like if opponent is stealing from my deck or my class,
or hand,
and they've stolen or hand. Well, I guess hand you can kind of play around. But if they've stolen from my deck or my class and they've stolen four or five cards, there is no way I can play around that. Like I just.
Yep.
Lay my cards out, and then that causes
huge
removal of the player versus player interaction there, because the player versus player interaction in card games is trying to figure out, all right, what does my opponent have in his hand? How do I play around that? How do I put myself in the best position to kind of deal with that? And that's what's going to cause players to be able to win more consistently when they're better. Well, that's the part that I have the most fun doing in Hearthstone, and those kind of archetypes of decks completely remove that aspect of the game, and it make me feel like, well, I just play this and I hope for the best.
Yeah.
Agreed. I think I like Burgle. I think it's a well-designed card for the same reason I think the nerfed Yogg is probably going to be a well-designed card, in that it's something fun and silly that you can do and different, and it's probably not that strong that it's going to be affecting competitive play too much. So you don't have to deal with Burgle constantly. As long as it's not there in your face in tournaments, always a problem, I think it's fine to have these kind of silly, random, unpredictable effects a little bit on the side, on ladder, whatever.
Yeah, as long as they're not pushing for it in for tournament meta, I'm totally fine with it. But if they're trying to push that sort of style of rogue to be the style of rogue, I think that's going to be a problem. We already see that kind of style of rogue popping up in places. Like in the Onog tournament, Zixo brought Burgle Arcane Giant Rogue. Yeah. Like, that was a real deck.
It's pretty good.
That he was playing.
I think it has to do with the quarterfinals. Kind of sucks. Like, one of the big reasons you see those decks is because the identity of rogue has been kind of stripped. And they're trying to reset it, I think, you know, over the course of the next expansions. It's just trying to make rogue, like, give them two different types of decks. You know, the whole, I want to say that the Burgle deck is kind of a tempo deck a little bit more because it plays minions that are on the board and then it tries to just play those spells for board control. Like, it does that a bit more than the Miracle style, which is a lot more spell-centric. But it also gives the, like, the tempo, quote-unquote, archetype of rogue, like, a flavor. The issue is if they keep getting good cards, like, you know, 1-1 that draws you a card is fine. If you get a 2/2 huckster that gets your card, also pretty good.
I think you're
Zalea, you're glitching really hard.
Somebody's glitching. Okay.
Yeah, Zalea's
there you go. It's better now. I don't know what happened there.
Like the point is, I really like the fact that they have like the Burgle archetype, but I don't want them to keep pushing high static cards that just do things that are good. Yeah.
Well, so the good news is that they're not saying that's going to be the archetype they want rogue to be. Thankfully, they still want it to be very combo oriented, and that's good. I think rogue should be very combo oriented. I like the way that's designed right now, where it's just like, you know, there are many moments when you're playing rogue at any skill level where you have to go all in at some point. You know, sometimes you go all in like by turn 4 or 5, and or sometimes you
play the current version of rogue that's most popular has been playing around with the idea of cutting gadgets and auctioneer and going all in a lot more often. We saw even Oskaka in a recent tournament playing no gadgets and auctioneers in his rogue deck, and you just go all in on turn 3 or 4 with either Edwin or Questing Adventure and hope it works out and hope you win. And I don't like that play style of rogue either. Like, that's not combo oriented at that point. That's just YOLO with conceal and hope you win. So
yeah, but that's a risk you take. I mean, it's like
a risk you take every game. Like,
I'm saying
entire deck is revolved around taking that risk.
It is, but I'm saying, like, it's a strategy you take, like, going into a competitive event. You take that as one of your strategies for your deck. Like, this deck is not meant to go long. Like, if I just totally whiff on my draws, like, then I'm going to lose, like, badly. Well, but
the way that they're designing it, though, is it's a percentage-based deck, and it's like, it's how often can my opponent answer a concealed either Questing or Edwin?
Yeah,
and then they value that percentage as, well, my opponent answers it 45% of the time, so I'm going to have 55% win rate against high-level players, and that's good enough for me in a competitive environment. And that is the definition of just stacking a coin flip and then going into a competitive event and hoping. And I don't want rogue to turn into that either, where they're just all inning with conceal every game. Like, that isn't fun or fun to watch or fun to play from either side.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's very high roll. Like, that's just what I dislike about it. It's super high roll.
Yeah, totally. All right. So the next thing they talked about is, they talked about card balance, but I think it's pretty much covered with what we were, just with the nerves that came out. So they're basically saying they've been discussing like 15 to 20 cards, which is good to hear. And I think we saw a few of them today. Randomonium. So a lot of people have been maybe on Reddit or whatnot, just complaining that Randomonium again, you know, for Tavern Brawl or whatnot. But it was nice that he basically revealed that this is by far the most popular Tavern Brawl. That's the reason that you're seeing it like so much. So, or at least it continues. Yeah, it's he says continues to be one of the most highly played brawls, so that's the reason we see them, and I think that's okay. I think that's, there's a lot of people that probably enjoy the fact that Randomonium's out again.
I don't really play Tavern Brawls.
Exactly.
The only ones I ever play are like the ones where like you get to pick 2 cards and that's your whole deck, or you get to pick three cards and that's your whole deck. I have fun with those, but I can understand that those are kind of more like you do them once and then you're like, probably never going to play that again, whereas Randomonium has more replayability.
Replayability, I guess.
And casual players love it. They get to play with cards they don't have or whatever.
Exactly,
and
that's the biggest part.
I think that's fine. You know, the Tavern Brawl is not a competitive game mode, so I don't know what I'm supposed to add to this. So I'm just going to say, congrats, Tavern Brawl is awesome. Fun for new players. I think they're accomplishing their goals and really grand slamming that one out of the park.
Oh, man. Okay, and lastly, he was talking about just the feature of adding more stats to the Hearthstone UI. Because a lot of people have probably been asking, like, well, I want to see how many wins I have that's over 500, you know, for a lot of these classes or whatnot. And I know a lot of us here, like, use trackers, you know, deck trackers and all kinds of things. We keep our own stats, but I don't know. Have you guys been dying for? Have you guys been wanting that feature in Hearthstone?
Heck yeah. I want more stats.
All right, you
want. I want to have as little stats as possible. I want to try and get all the deck trackers banned. I want to get tracker bots banned. I want to have it so that I can make stats on my own little spreadsheet, and no one else will have stats because everyone will be too lazy to make their own stats. And then I will win the competitive scene again. I want that to come back. I don't want any vicious syndicate figuring out the meta. I want all of that stuff to die so that no one has the statistical advantage over me and I can profit and make money off the competitive scene. But I think stats, at the end of the day, the reason why Blizzard's so hesitant to release so many stats is because it does cause the meta to get solved faster. If there's more stats talking about win percentages and all that sort of stuff,
well,
the meta gets solved faster. That's more work for them. They got to print more new cards faster. You know, like, because right now the meta gets solved in Legend Ladder very quickly with all the data available, with all the stuff with win percentage. You can go look and find the win percentage of every matchup a few days after the new cards are released and then make adjustments to your deck. And then a few days later, everything changes a little bit. You make more adjustments. And within a week, you've cracked the entire competitive top Legend meta, basically. And cards take six, seven months to come out, man. So we're figuring everything out in a week.
You know, well, isn't great. That already kind of happening with net decking anyways to some degree?
Well, with net decking, it's even slower than with stats and net decking. Like,
sure. Yeah, we're really taking it to the next level. Like, Vicious Syndicate, props to them. They're doing a great job of their job, right? Like, just crushing it.
That's what people want, that, so they're giving people what they want. So they're really doing a really, really good job at it. They're doing way too good of a job because it's causing the meta to get figured out. Way too fast.
But you can't blame them. It's just humans doing what humans do, right? We're learning and we're getting better at... We're learning how to learn how to beat these games.
Solve an equation. Here we go. Yeah. And you have to solve a problem.
The better we are at it, the more downtime we're going to have of, well, this is the meta now, and just do that for X amount of months. And that downtime has increased with every single expansion, and that's no fault to Blizzard making less complicated expansions. I think the complexity of the expansions have gone up. But I think it's just people are getting a hell of a lot better at figuring out the meta, and there's way, way, way more stats and tools available to help them do that.
Well, the game mechanics as well. Like, I'd say the earliest days of Hearthstone were where people were still trying to figure out how you should, quote-unquote, play Hearthstone. And, you know, unlike something like Magic the Gathering, for instance, where the game mechanics allow for those crazy types of decks to come up, like, Hearthstone has a very limited, like, I guess your game plan is kind of similar across decks. And just because of that, it's easier to narrow down the scope of what's going to be relevant during an expansion. So it gets just figured out quicker because people know game mechanics. That's really it.
Well, yeah, there's less new players and more the experienced player base has gone up.
Pretty much. And even the new players now, they come in and they have this overload of data. And if you net deck now, you'll never stumble upon like this random priest deck. Like, you'll actually find a good deck. Like, every single deck you find on that deck is...
Like, non-Legend Ladder, rank 16, and I'll be versing some guys with just full Control Warrior. And I'm like,
really?
Like,
how the fuck are you here?
How are you here?
I mean, they do misplay more, though. Like, you can tell...
That's why they're there.
Yeah, that's why they're there.
As well as they should.
But
their deck is flawless.
Yeah, they all have, like...
Yeah, perfect decks.
Like, it's like... I don't even know.
But I would just like to see more cards, I guess, in Hearthstone. Like, that's one of the things that I want to see more of. And whether it's frequency or just the volume that they push at once, deck diversity is limited because of the cards we get. And like they've made an effort in trying to push different archetypes, right? Like, we saw the totems come in, like with the Witch Doctor and Think from Below. But again, we talked about that, but that's like force diversity in a weird way. So the metagame gets figured out faster because those cards are obviously good in that specific shell that Blizzard is shoving kind of in your face.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a totem deck. There we go. I can't innovate with Wicked Witch Doctor. It's always going to be in a totem deck. Like, there's no creativity to it, really.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, I think that's going to be it for the blue posts here. Okay, so we've got a little bit of news too for a friend of ours, which is Orange, is that he's actually joining Alliance. Alliance is actually getting into Hearthstone, which is really cool because they've never done anything with Hearthstone, and this page that they have you too, like the announcement page, is kind of cool. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, but if you go to it, it's got this little this card opening. Oh, I didn't show it. Shoot, I totally missed it. I gotta show it again. Shoot, hold on.
Very loud though.
Yeah, that was loud. I can't turn that down though. Let me turn it down just for a second. Here we go.
I don't know if I can hear it. All I know is.
Oh, he's legendary.
He's legendary. Exactly.
The innkeeper.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah, congrats to him for getting picked up. I know he was looking around for a while. So, Lions being a pretty big team, especially in games like Dota 2, and, should be interesting if they pick up more players too, because there's some more players that are looking for teams. There's not just LG out there.
It's always scary when new orgs pick up Hearthstone that don't have like a card game team or anything like that, because my experience when I was just joining kind of teams that never had a Hearthstone team before, they're like, all right, you're the best in the world, right? And I was like, I'm the best in the world, man. And they're like, all right, win. And I was like,
what?
Doesn't work like that. This is Hearthstone.
Like, why did you lose? Did you not practice enough? I'm like, I practiced a lot. And they're like, well, you lost. And I'm like, I know I lost, but it's a card game. You can't win every time. And they're like, why are we paying you? So it's a bit tricky and a little bit different, and some people don't really know what to expect with that. So hopefully, you know, I'm sure Alliance being a big org and all that stuff kind of knows what they're getting into with Hearthstone as far as that goes. But that can be kind of an adjustment period for a lot of esports managers when they kind of take their first step into Hearthstone, because it's a very different beast than a lot of the other kind of esports scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, why don't we talk about some decks? We spent a lot of time talking about just the news and whatnot. So we've got a few decks that I think would be pretty fun to talk about. I have a couple that, just a couple that I've been playing with this week that have been pretty fun and might be pretty good discussion points, just given some of the changes today. But first one I have up here is this Reno Lock, this Medivh Reno Lock, and I've talked a little bit about it before, but at least a Reno Lock. But this one is more dragon centric, and given that Yogg is being nerfed, there's always been this eerie similarity with Doom and Yogg, you know, for me when I'm playing this deck, especially with Medivh, because like I get a minion at the end of it too, and basically everything happens good. That's good, right? Like, I get to draw cards, get to remove board, and I get a 10 drop, you know, whenever I play this. And a lot of people, you know, like when they watch my stream or whatnot, they notice the same thing. So, I kind of want to see what you guys think, obviously, of the deck, but also of just Doom in general. Like, how close is it to being something to be played in competitive?
I like seeing it with Medivh. I think that's a really solid idea. Like, being ahead on board at the end of your board clear instead of them developing on empty boards, a big difference. I think it makes a lot of sense in the deck. How close is it to being a competitive card? Pretty close. I mean, like, I think if it were a 9 mana, I'd be more likely to play. I think that the main thing holding Doom back is just kind of Reno Lock not being that good right now. Like, maybe if they unnerfed Molten Giant, you know, because Arcane Giant's a thing, so the Molten Giant nerf's just confusing to me at this point.
It gets really weird.
As a control card, right? You can only really play it in sort of control-y sort of decks, and they're like, control decks getting 0 mana 8/8s, everyone loves control decks, let's take that away. And then they're like, aggro decks, everyone hates that. Let's give them a 0 mana.
Yeah, 0 mana 8/8. Yeah, that was a surprise.
That is a very interesting decision there from their part to kind of go that line with it. But Control Warlock, it's really not in a great position right now. And part of that is just because the hero power is so powerful, a lot of the control tools for Warlock are on almost Hunter power level as far as control cards are concerned. Mm-hmm. Like, their board controls and all that sort of stuff are like really, really weak without any Dark Bomb or anything like that. Their just ability to control the board early is really bad. And with Shaman being a popular deck and Druid being a popular deck, if you let those decks run rampant and don't control their board, they're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. So I think Control Warlock's in just like a terrible spot, and that's why these sort of decks don't see competitive play. But if they, you know, the meta changes or whatever and there's a lot of warriors, this will beat the hell out of some warriors. Like,
oh, it does. It definitely does.
Yeah. So it's just like the too fast tempo-oriented meta is too good for a lot of the Warlock's control tools.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that Reno Lock was good. I mean, I remember when Frozen was playing not too long ago. And
I mean, even when Frozen was playing, I don't think it was good. He was just queuing it up on ladder, and he would hit warrior every time, and he'd verse 9 warriors in a row and hit number 1 legend. But, like, when he missed warriors and versed a shaman, he died on turn 6. Like,
yeah, that's true.
You know?
But it's definitely a fun, if you're not running into a lot of shaman, I mean, you definitely have those days where you do run into a lot of them, but when you don't, this deck is a lot of fun, and Warlock's just got that. It's one of the few classes that have those really power Medivh mana costed spells. Like, there's not many that have 10, 8, and 6, and there's sure. You know, even there's 5. I mean, there's certain mana levels where the minions are actually good if you like have a randomly generated one, so or randomly summoned one, and that's one of them.
Zalay, you're crashing again.
Okay, Mike's freaking out. No big deal. That's the first one. The next one I wanted to bring up was the a dragon shaman deck, and I'm bringing this up mostly because people have been asking me about it because I referred to it last week and I didn't really show it. So this is kind of similar to that control deck I had a while back with just the dragon deck that I had before, but this one's a lot later game and it's more of a control shaman, and it's got all the dragons. It's got it's got the elemental destructions, all the removal basically, and then it's got just Alex Strahd and Rag at the end of it. So the reason I bring this up is just because I still have Tuskar in there because I didn't change it, you know, after the change today. Does it affect anything with this? I mean, people still going to be playing things from below in Tuskar, right? In terms of all shaman.
Sure. Yeah. Seems fine. Yeah. Okay. The one thing I would talk about with this deck is, do we need Netherspite Historian? Can we beat Control Warrior with our current value?
I've questioned that too. Yeah,
it's like if we can beat Control Warrior with the current amount of value in our deck, then those should be Doomsayers. So
that's a good point.
So that we to can go beat more aggro,
the
right?
usual control list, and I think it's fine because you're also making it so you have less dead cards because Netherspite Historian requires you to have a specific type of hand. Which, but if you take
if
it out,
you need it to
helps.
Beat Control Warrior, though, then you kind of have to keep it in there so that you can kind of shore up that matchup.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if without Thunderbolt Valiant, I guess it makes the whole totem stuff less threatening.
That's
like,
right.
There's no Flame Tongue, there's no.
Yeah. I mean, I had Tuskar in there, honestly, mostly just because it's just too good not to have in there. Like, it's just, like, the best 3-drop I can get, and I can get card draw from it, potentially. And, you know, so there were definitely some hits that I could get with it. But now, it's definitely purely just the things from below play. And maybe I can get it with Lightning Storm, you know, just with Air Totem. But it's
the thing about Tuskar is if you high roll a totem, unless it's Totem Golem, you kind of need to have board control to really value that high roll. And you're literally never going to have board control with this deck because you just don't have really a curve that's going to go in for that. So Tuskar Totemic definitely drops a lot in value in this sort of curve. So you could maybe think about cutting those for also Doomsayers or something to make it so that Aggro Shaman and Zoo and that sort of stuff doesn't just run you over.
Even Stormcrack, I think, would be
Stormcrack's pretty good.
Stormcrack's not bad.
Yeah, this is the type of card that would fit the deck, I think.
Blood Mage, Thalnos, and Spirit Claws, that kind of setup going on. You have Azurdrakes already, so if you cut both of the Tuskar Totemics and the Acidic Swampoos, drop in a Thalnos and 2 Spirit Claws, early game board control just goes through the roof.
Yeah.
It is. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's more control based again, right?
Oh,
like
very.
Then the question becomes like how consistently do you need Bookworm at that rate? Right? Like once you've established like all this crazy board control early, how often do you need the 6-drop to clear stuff?
It's not so much the Bookworm as it is like elemental destruction and following it up with, you know, something behind it, right? Like things from below or that sort of thing.
No, I get that. My point is like once you add all the removal, like if you cut the early game, like how often do you need it? The extra bit from Bookworm, and is it not just a better like
fire
to have Fire Ellie on top of Blackwing Corruptor?
Well, if you go Fire Ellie, you don't have enough dragons. You only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dragons.
Five dragons to enable the Corruptor.
You need 7 to 9, a lot of the time, dragon eggs, especially if you're gonna want to be able to hit Corruptor with any sort of consistency.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. I like the list.
It's a fun deck though. It does well, actually. It's surprising how much heal you actually need in the current meta, no one's expecting it.
That's for sure. Like most people are definitely going to be like, all right, shaman, aggro shaman,
full
mulligan,
face.
super defensively, or it's mid range shaman. They're going to try and snowball aboard mulligan super defensively, and then this shaman's just going to be like totem pass,
totem pass.
What's going on? I'm so confused.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about a C'Thun deck that Firebat has here. He calls it the Cycle Priest C'Thun deck. So this one's pretty dirty. So why don't you walk us through this?
All right, so you know that really great deck, Cycle C'Thun Warrior? This is that, but in priest form, basically. So the main goal is to try and draw cards while buffing your C'Thun, and then you play C'Thun, they kill C'Thun, and you get an Emperor discount on either Bran or Doomcaller, and then you Bran Doomcaller, get 2 additional C'Thuns, and then play your C'Thuns. So you have a bit of flexibility with things like Forbidden Shaping being able to be used as like an 8-drop against Control Warrior, or also being able to use as a Wild Pyromancer proc for 0 against aggro decks. And then you try and draw with Northshire Cleric, Wild Pyromancer, Spell, Circle. That's like your main draw engine combo. So you play your Loot Hoarders and your Thalnos and your Acolyte of Pains and all that sort of stuff to try and find that draw combo. And then you get that draw combo off, which then draws basically your entire deck. And then you get a big Wild Pyromancer combo off with the second Wild Pyromancer to try and clear. And then you play your C'Thun cards, heal for 10 maybe, C'Thun'em, and then Doomcaller, and then C'Thun'em, then C'Thun'em.
That's dirty, man. That is dirty.
It's pretty fun. I had a very positive win rate on the Legend Ladder on stream, so I was able to get like 8-3 on Legend Ladder.
That's pretty cool.
Really good, yeah.
And, I was able to beat a Control Warrior that on turn 5 was at 60 life because he had gained 30 armor because he had 2 armor smiths on the field for some reason in his Control Warrior. And I went Cleric, Wild Pyromancer, Power Richard, Sealed Circle. So you can imagine there's a lot of Wild Pyromancer procs going off on these armor smiths. So by the like middle stage of the game, he had around 80 life. And I was still able to just make 8 drops with Forbidden Shaping and then slam 3 C'Thun's down. And he eventually ran out of single target removal and I just killed him. So it's definitely got some late game potential, as well as also being able to beat, you know, Zoo and Aggro Shaman with the Wild Pyromancer combos for early game board clears. So it's pretty flexible.
I will be playing that tonight for sure. this sounds like a lot of fun. Holy crap. All right. Speaking of priest decks, Noxious has another priest deck too. Spawn
Mine's a little
of
bit more
confusion. Okay.
So this is just a deck like I used to run aggro priest back when Shadow the Bomber was a thing, but I'm using Confuse now. I used to play Confuse for the whole like Murloc shenanigan where you just have fun with Murloc Priest, just for fun. I ended up like turn 5-ing Control Warrior, I think like 2 days ago with Murloc Priest at like rank 2. The guy was pretty pissed, I imagine. But like then I realized I could probably play Confuse in a more standard type of aggro deck, and I ended up coming up with this where Arcane Anomaly replaces the Shadow Bomber from a while back. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind the card is just it keeps getting buffed, and it is the type of card that actually just sticks around forever. Like if it ever gets buffed sufficiently with Powered Shield, that 2 attack minion is just an unremovable Twilight Whelp that doesn't require dragon enablers. And it keeps getting like stupider and stupider as you play more spells with it, which is kind of cool. But the Priest of the Feast is actually what convinced me to make the deck again, because I used to run Akinai in that place, you know, with the Circle of Healing in the deck being that it's just good. And I used to include Wild Pyro for the cycle to get the Spawn of Shadows, and I played Flash Heals, but that was like more of a mid-range priest at that stage, which is just cycling for burst. And it played like a normal priest. I wanted something more minion-based, so I played like 9 one-drops with the Seraph Finley, and Mind Blast, Holy Smites for spells, and Finisher with Leroy, Holy Fire at the top end. And like it's not a deck that's going to, you know, get you to top 10 legend, but it certainly can climb. And it's really fun to see people's reaction when they see the like the amount of one drops you're running and how they just can't handle them. Like a young priestess is so stupid and so bad until you just hit something with it in priest and you power chill, and suddenly you have a minion that never dies. And it just goes to show just how scared Blizzard probably is of giving priests good board control. Like if you ever have it happen, it's just disgusting. Like nobody can take it out, and it's really dumb.
What's the average damage of Confuse in this deck?
So far, I'd say every single game I've played, it was like at least 5. Yeah, it's been
that's pretty good value.
Yeah, it's pretty good value. Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. I was surprised.
You know, that was way higher than I thought it was going to be.
You know, I've been looking at Confuse actually a lot recently. I made some like video with just a few cards I think that are kind of neat that nobody's playing, and just because of power level or whatnot. And Confuse is actually one of them. And just generally with Priest, I think Priest has like a lot of cool spells that just cannot be utilized right now. Unlike Hunter, just has crap things. I think Priest actually has some neat things, and Confuse is one of them. Yeah. And Confuse right now, like against Shaman as a removal, really good, is actually like something to think about. And some, I mean, it just as a card itself. Even just with Wild Pyromancer like comboed there in some things like against Zoo or whatnot, but Confuse is actually a really cool card, and it's cool that you're using it from the standpoint of aggro, because that's what people used to use it in, combo or aggro, right? That sort of deck. But I really really like it. Young Priestess is surprising though. I think just generally like them getting away from buffing health for Priest, you know, that used to be the identity, right, of Priest. Yeah, just everything buffs health.
The cultist,
you used
right?
to be able to buff health of Priest pretty well with the identity, and like Priest had all the high health minions work for the hero power, and then you had like Velen's Chosen actually buffed the attack enough so that you could actually start making trades with it. And then for a moment there, like, Priest actually could kill things. Now you just buff the health indefinitely, and then people are like, okay, we don't care about
it. I don't really give a shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. It's like, who gives a crap about that?
Yeah. If you don't have any way to buff the attack, it doesn't really end up mattering, so...
Yeah, true. I mean, there's always inner fire, right? I mean, but that turns into like a combo thing. That's what's the problem.
Yeah. Like, to add to the whole, you asked how much confused damage, like how much damage it dealt. Like, to the face, like, I'll go with 5 if you set it up properly. But the thing is, so often you can use it as damage on minions, right? Like, that's the other big component to it that I found more important, even like in most spots. Mm-hmm. It's just like
you kill some totems, right?
Yeah, like you wipe an entire board of totems, and it's just really solid in that way.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
aggro priest,
fun stuff. Aggro priest, man. That's the dream. That is like Noxious's dream, man. Aggro priest.
That's my dream, dude.
It is. It seriously is.
It is. I really want one. One day.
That would definitely be cool. All right, well, we're going to move on, talk about some of the events that happened this past week. But before that, I want to give a big quick shout out just to all the folks on iTunes and Patreon. Big shout out to Germanimal and New York Jets fan 7723 for a couple of 5-star reviews. Thanks a lot for that. And if you are an audio listener or listen to Valuetown on iTunes, you enjoy the show, leaving a review really, really helps out the show. So really appreciate it if you do. And a big shout out to some of our patrons that support the show too: Devin Westfall, Jacob Perez, David Thomas, Elu45, Amish TV, and Lucas Capdeville. And if you are interested in possibly being a patron for Valuetown and supporting us, you can do so on patreon.com/valuetown. Got some cool cheap milestones and things like that you can partake into. Kind of cool. All right, events. HTT EU Summer Championship happened, as well as Start Democracy. But why don't we start with the HTT and Dr. Hippie? Dr. Hippie winning it, and everybody was just so shocked that he didn't bring a Freeze Mage, which is understandable since he's such a really great Freeze Mage and has always been known for his Freeze Mage play. But he ended up bringing a Tempo Mage, or just your standard Mage these days, and basically saying he barely even practiced it. So I guess it's just that good right now. Because
or Freeze Mage is that bad.
Yeah, or Freeze Mage
is just
that
really
bad.
That bad. It's,
yeah.
Freeze Mage has so few good matchups. Like, when the popular decks are Druid and Warrior.
Yeah, bad
and
times.
Druid became, like, before Freeze Mage had a percent chance against Druid. Like, they could sometimes win, their cards line up right, they get the win there. Now they're running double Feral Rage, Moonglade Portal. They have, that's 16, and then that's 22 points of healing in their deck, on top of their hero power, and then on top of the average healing from Raven Idols, which has got to be pretty high because Moonglade Portal exists now as well. Seriously. So it's like you're looking at like 30 extra healing on top of 30 health in a pressure midrange deck. So it's like the best possible deck against Freeze Mage as far as board pressure is concerned. And then it also has 30 healing. So it's just absolutely absurd how good Druid got against Freeze Mage.
Yeah.
And then Warrior is Warrior. That's going to beat your Freeze Mage.
I guess maybe a better question is that why didn't he just bring a different class, given that he barely even played Mage? So I was like really surprised that...
Well, his lineup targeted Freeze Mage pretty heavily, which makes a lot of sense with, George C. in the bracket and some of the other guys bringing Freeze Mage. Yeah. So, like, pretty much all of his decks, except for the Rogue, were pretty good against Freeze Mage and could... Mm. Definitely just get free wins against Freeze Mage with Dragon Warrior, Druid, and all that sort of stuff, and the Tempo Mage even.
Yeah. So what do you guys think overall? I mean, kind of what you expected?
I picked Dr. Hippie to win. I picked the finals to be George C versus Dr. Hippie, and I picked Dr. Hippie to win. Like, before everything.
You're such, prophet. Prophet Firebat.
I had no idea who the other guys were for the most part. I talked to them briefly. I knew who George C. was. I talked to him before. I know who Dr. Hippie was. I've been at a few events with him before, talked to him in person before. And Dr. Hippie's really good.
No question.
I thought he had the highest percent chance to win going into it. Like, I've casted him play before. He's a really solid player, makes a lot of really great decisions, really nice guy in person, and thinks about the game in a cool and interesting way. Like, he's not one of the players that's just like, yeah, these decks are good, I'm good at them, I play a lot. He's even when I've talked to him, he doesn't even speak English that well, and you can understand that he understands the mechanics behind the game and the reasons why the things he's playing are good and whatnot, rather than just admitting that they're good.
Yeah.
So I think he's a smart guy and a good player, and I expected him to win.
Yeah, he's saying a few more things too, you know, in the interview. Like before, he was like literally a one word answer, like during his interviews. So he's loosening up a little bit. But I would be lying if I didn't say I would have liked to have seen like a boss do well, just because I just liked how crazy he gets whenever things are going well for him. At least how emotionally he gets.
Yeah, a lot of the BM play.
Yeah, no, well, BM, I don't know about the BM play, but definitely going nuts on Cam is always something very entertaining. Yeah, sure. No, but congrats to Dr. Hippie. I mean, he's gotten very far in multiple championships now, so at least HTC championships. So not surprised that he ended up winning that one.
Him and George C have like some of the highest win rates in Hearthstone at the moment, which is pretty impressive, honestly, because even though their sample size is fairly small, like it's still big enough to be like, that's pretty cool, man. like nice. it's not big enough to be like, you're the best player ever, but it's big enough to be like,
yep,
you're doing something right, you're better than the other guys. There's something that's clicking here that I'm not seeing, because as far as I'm concerned, my win rate in the current competitive meta is not great. You know, I've tried some things, tried to figure it out myself, and you know, I've been like, this meta is maybe not the best for me. I can't figure out what's clicking to get me above, you know, that 65% threshold. And these guys are just chilling at 80 for some reason.
Oh,
you
know, my God.
Granted, they maybe hit some good runs, because they've only played like two or three tournaments. So at 80, it's a pretty much 100% guarantee that they're high rolling at the moment.
Yes.
But it's still impressive.
They're still doing some things right alongside high rolling, for sure.
Nice to be winning tournaments too when you're high rolling, because I know some people that, you know, they don't actually are able to convert on that at least that time. But mid range shaman was just sweeping some of the series.
Me and Zalay have some experience with some mid-range shaman with the tournament we were casting.
Yes.
Almost every other series was decided by a 3-0 mid-range shaman sweep. So these nerfs, very good timely nerfs.
Up.
Absolutely.
Almost half of the tournament games were victories for mid-range shaman. Like it's
and shaman, man.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Star Democracy. So the Star Democracy, for those of you that might not have been watching, it was the Onog and VGVN tournament that banned Yogg and Tuskar. It was invitational only, so we saw a lot of our favorite players and streamers and whatnot battling it out. And Shrivko ended up winning with a pretty cool Hunter deck. Right. At least I don't know how many wins he actually got with it, but it was
a lot. Actually.
Did he get
he had
a ton
a,
of
he had
it?
A few 3-0 sweeps with the.
Yeah, nice. Did he? I missed the 3-0 sweeps.
It all started with an Azure Drake explosive trap.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. That was awesome.
He was dead to dogs.
That was awesome.
I missed that I was casting
it. Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah.
It could have been played around, but just everybody missed it. Dog missed it. I missed it. And
Shrivko was laughing.
Stopped some 6-3.
Yeah.
Blue kills.
Yeah, Dog needed to attack face with his Ashbringer first to proc the explosive trap,
right.
And he plays anything and just goes face and kills Strifecrow. But he's like, well, he's got explosive trap up, I know that for sure, but that only does two, so all my Murlocs will live, because there's two War Leaders buffing him up, then that Azure Drake's just sitting there on the board slayed all those Murlocs, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so if people are wondering what we're talking about, so Strifeco actually ran a Hunter deck that had Azure Drakes and had a Curator, obviously, to draw into those beasts and Azure Drakes. It ended up being, like, quite an effective deck. When I was watching him, he was winning, like, maybe half the game. So, like, obviously, he had some sweeps, too, which is pretty amazing. He ended up playing Hoi in the finals. Ended up winning the whole thing, obviously. But what are some of the trends that you noticed just generally in the deck? If you remove Yogg and remove Tuskar altogether, which maybe this is going to be the new world, right? This is going to be what it might be like a little bit, at least.
Removing Yogg from the game buffs Shaman the most.
Mid Shaman, right?
Mid Shaman is really, really, really good Yogg isn't in the game. Because if we looked at Mid Shaman, in pretty much every game Mid Shaman lost was like at least 25-40% of the games Mid Shaman lost somewhere in that range was to Yogg, because Mid Shaman builds a board, goes all in on the board.
Yeah.
If Yogg comes down on exactly turn 10 and removes that board, then Mid Shaman's got to build all of that up from ground zero and likely loses the game. So Yogg is just crazy effective. Yogg was in the Warriors that countered Mid Shaman, Yogg was in the Druids that countered mid shaman, and those were the only decks that countered mid shaman. So with
Druid
that
didn't
gone,
mid shaman, not at all.
It was warrior, I guess. The warrior with Yogg was the counter to mid shaman that most people were bringing.
Yeah.
And with that gone, no one in that tournament after the nerfs will have a counter to mid shamans. So we have to hope that the rock fighter.
I don't think it does either, man. I think mid range shamans just the it's probably even better. After the change,
I think it actually just got a buff as well. I think it will be
a lot better.
We don't want to see very much shaman, guys. We're having a problem with the amount of shaman
being
played right now.
That's like the biggest meme ever, though. That like the card that everyone hates is the card that was oppressing the deck that everyone hates. Like the thing that was holding midrange shaman back the most was Yogg.
Yeah. People hated aggro shaman. People kept bitching about aggro shaman, where like it's mostly a combination of everything. But I agree. But the point is, like, it's like the whole toolkit that makes the class good. And that toolkit for mid range, especially the Wicked Witch Doctor version, just doesn't give a fuck. Like, it just keeps doing its thing right now.
We got,
and if anything, it just got better because, you know, Execute's gone. Well, not gone, but it's worse. And you have Call the Wild, which also, for all it matters, which is very little. Doesn't exist. So now Mage doesn't have it in the Yogg, like Yogg Mage, and Druid doesn't have Yogg anymore. So it's like, oh, I guess we're playing mid range.
It's way harder to stop mid range shamans board once they start snowballing.
How do you remove board when you've got a bunch of four health and five health minions and six health minions and Thunderbolt?
The only answer is now to like the snowball board is one, stop it before it happens. If you,
we got storms over here.
Use either Brawl or Flame Strike, right? Is there any, like, Equality Consecrate from Paladin, I guess, but it's just like when you're forcing decks to have to play these sort of things or these sort of archetypes have to be played against you, otherwise they have to just race your deck down.
Yeah.
It's very detrimental to the meta. It's like going to cause people to have to shape their decks around, you know, the power of midrange shaman.
Yeah, and
it's crazy that Control Warrior was showing up with Yogg. Like, that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
Control Warrior's
like,
all right, I got two Revenge, two Brawl, two Ravaging Ghoul. This is not enough AoE to stop the mid shaman. I need a Yogg in here.
It's like, I could play Deathwing, but not fucking
time.
It's so hard to race down midrange shaman too, because if you try to play the aggro strategy of kill them before they start developing their board control and snowballing it, Spirit Claws, Maelstrom Portal,
Totem Golems
spell power, Totem Golems, like they have just all of the best early game board control tools out of any class. So then you start being like, well, I guess I'll aggro shaman down your midrange shaman. Like,
that's why
that becomes the reality.
That's why Elemental Destruction can be like such a beautiful card.
Because I think
it's
like
the control shaman.
I think control shaman is actually a really good way to handle all that midrange.
Next in competitive meta, Dragon Man's Dragon Shaman.
Oh my god,
honestly,
that would be awesome.
The problem I have right now is that the best control deck I foresee is like control shaman, and that doesn't really deal with midrange since it's also a shaman.
Well, the issue with control shaman is a lot of the times the win condition you lean towards is like some sort of Nazoth endgame, and that gets harmed by midrange shaman because of Hex. So that's what I'm saying. Maybe Chan-Man's Dragon Route's the way to go.
Let's do it.
Play around Hex, get some Nefarian action.
There you go.
Get in everywhere.
Keep those Historians in there. Just get three Aceras. It's cool, man. It's like, that's enough for late game for you, right?
You'll outlast their Hexes with the late game.
Exactly, right?
Could you technically play Priest? Like, realistically?
Realistically, no.
You didn't get nerfed. Executes out. You can wipe the board.
I mean, Priest has some of the better board clears in the game, but you're going to have to have Pain's lineup with Thunderbluff Valiant's Totem Golem still just kills you because you can't paint it if you're trying to save the Thunderbluff.
Our Totem Golem, like, we could just put that to the side for a little bit, and like, that's one
the biggest issue with
Priest
is like, in the middle of the game, a lot of times, a Flame Tank Totem hits the board, you don't have an answer for it, and you're dead.
Yeah.
They Temple Hex one of your minions, and you're behind on board for the entire game, and you're dead. It doesn't matter how many times you sweep
it,
because
they
just
nothing
reload.
Feels worse when they Hex your injured.
You have no way in Priest at all to swing the tempo back. There's just no card. Every time you board clear, you give them 5 mana or 6 mana to reload the board. And your tempo swing is Alkali Circle, leaving behind the 3-1.
So sad.
And then they Spirit Claw it off and reload the board with 5
reload
mana.
The board again. And the thing is, like, the Spirit Claws deal 18 to you over the course of the game. If they like, that's one of the big things that I hate is, like, when I look at this card and I think, all right, I'm not going to feed them a minion, then at some point they just go, well, fuck it, I'm swinging face, and I'm just looking at this, like, a 3-turn clock of 9 damage coming in, and I can't stop it.
I mean, you're Priest. You're the third best healing deck in the game, so you really can't take that much face damage.
Yeah.
like Druid and Warrior, Druid, Warrior and Paladin are all better at healing than Priest.
Yeah. Top four, Priest, though.
Priest is in the top four for healing.
Of like, the four what, healing classes.
What is Priest good at? It's
actually,
not
wait,
the best
healing wave. Healing
either.
Wave is better.
It's the fifth best healing class in the game. And it's not the best at stealing minions because Rogue's better at stealing minions. Now, what is Priest good at?
Priest of the Feast has helped with that.
It's
that
really good at
it,
losing.
But,
like,
but,
yeah, nails it.
Priest is the number one best deck at losing. If there's anything Priest is good at, that's it. But other than that, they have nothing that they're the best
brutal.
At. Like, nothing.
Brutal.
Resurrect.
Well,
resurrecting. And Onyx Bishop. They have two ways to do it.
Sure. They're the best class at resurrecting things.
Yeah.
Remember what I want to see in Priest?
That's such a niche angle to go for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to see one mechanic added to Priest, which would make the class cool, is the idea of, like, a pacify effect, where you give people the debuff of Ancient Watcher. So you actually use that as a means of controlling the board without clearing it.
Like,
statue.
Petrify.
Yeah,
exactly.
Petrify something, basically. Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I remember the days, it was so long ago, when Priest was actually the counter to Shaman with all its removal.
Yeah, because it was
now
the best at doing board clears.
But isn't Horror the answer to Shaman?
No.
No, you can't play it. So many matchups. Like,
I know, that's the problem with it.
Priest isn't the best at board clears either. Warrior's better at board clearing than
Shaman's
Priest. Shaman's better at board clearing than Priest.
All right. I think we made our point there.
Priest's not good at anything. Just pick something and make them good at it.
But back to, I guess, mid-range or just mid-Shaman. It's going to be another, I don't know how many months or so, that we're going to be seeing mid-Shaman just dominate for a while.
If you don't know how to play mid-Shaman and you want to be competitive at Hearthstone, Google mid-Shaman deck lists, watch some streams from mid-Shaman, and just focus all about mid-Shaman and bring mid-Shaman to every single tournament. And
Alt F4 Shaman might beat it, but that's it. The AP drop, not the Nuzzoth route, like the AP drop Shaman, that actually beats mid-range consistently.
When all I know is
other things.
it beats a lot of stuff. I was surprised, but it's actually really good.
I doubt Shaman is going to be out of the meta until the next expansion hits.
Yeah.
So I think you should definitely invest the time to learn mid-range Shaman very, very well. Perfect it if you don't know how to play it. as well as Yogdruid. Those are the two main competitive decks that you should be able to play. Play the shit out of them. Just you should have above 75% win rate on ladder on those two decks. If you don't continue,
what are you
grinding.
Doing, man? You're like telling you
Dark
we're gonna, telling
that's how you're going to
I'm here, but definitely some questions on Twitter that we'll start off with, and then if you guys in Twitch chat want to, you know, kind of
we're offline
ask your questions.
Right now, apparently.
Oh, no. We're you guys back on?
Looks like it's coming back.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, my
maybe not.
I think my internet's been up and down a little bit here. Oh, is it up? Let me see.
Okay. Looks good.
Are we back? Okay. Sorry about that, guys. I have this giant storm here, so it's been causing some havoc, I think. As you could hear this thunder. The thunder bluffs are just sitting there pounding on my door, dude. But okay, so let's talk. Let's see. The first one is... from Coach Sunny, what is your least favorite nerf? I guess out of the ones that were listed, they were all good. So I guess the charge was my least favorite.
Least favorite nerf would probably be Call of the Wild.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe a bit too early for the Call of the Wild nerf, just because without extra tools to Hunter, the tier 2 deck of Hunter is going to just become tier 3. And
I like the nerf, but it's just...
It's too soon.
I'm happy it's happening now. That's the only thing that they did. The only problem is they, while making this nerf, they also need to revisit the next set to make sure that there's a compensation occurring soon enough. Right? Like, it doesn't have not to be nerfed. It just has to be compensated for in the next set, like, absolutely. Otherwise...
Well, I think one of the big compensations is a lot of the other decks get a lot worse, and Hunter really doesn't get too much worse in the cycle of Standard. Mm-hmm. So Hunter will kind of be all right, but, like... For now, these kind of like upcoming weeks before the rotation and before the new set comes out, no one's going to play Hunter. Like, why?
It's probably
so
true.
Hey, you know, that's
kind of fine with that.
I'm okay with that. But the question was, which one did you not like the most? And that's the one I don't like the most. Like, all the other ones are like too good not to like, right?
I think they're all like logical nerfs. I'm just going to go with like a personal, completely biased answer. I don't like the execute nerf. I think it's a good change for the game. I just like warrior. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Hey man, it's understandable.
I wish it was less versatile. Like I wish it could exist without being given to tempo decks. Like I wish you could lock down your specialization while you build a deck to where no one has access to this shit unless they run shield block, shield slam, as well as like some other Armageddon tools.
So you have like just a tech tree that you build for your deck.
Where you should have execute
specialization to decide your card pool.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, we're inventing a card game right now.
Hell yeah!
Actually, I don't know. I really love execute as it exists right now in Control Warrior. It just sucks that it's so good that it has to see play everywhere.
It's like we could make like an MMORPG plus card game sort of thing. So you build your character, and then your character, like you build a warrior, sort of warrior that you'd go on quests with and raid, and then based on your specializations and passives you choose, determine your card pool sort of thing.
Honestly, you don't even have, you just go to the selection, pick a spec, and have different cards show up. You know what would be badass, though, if they ever added a card that, you know how Shadow Form works for priests, where, you know, if you have a certain card active, then execute's cheaper. They could do stuff like that for sure.
Yeah, making cards work together is really cool. Yeah, that's been something that, when we made the custom cards before and talked about them, that's something that I kind of like highlighted in the custom cards that I made as well. Like just cards that work with other cards to make useless cards good.
Yeah, better.
Like cards that don't see any play. Like I remember I had one that I don't remember exactly what it did, but it like increased the damage of Frost Shock or whatever. So like if it was in your deck.
I forgot about that one. I forget which one that was. But yeah, so I know what you mean, though.
Making useless cards useful.
They've kind of done that with Shaman to a degree. That's kind of what I mean. You know, just with the synergies and stuff, like Totemic Might.
Shaman
right?
is good.
Holy crap. Like, exactly.
I think hopefully in future expansions, they kind of do that more with other classes and make them all more powerful rather than, you know, the idea of just Shaman's too good, make Shaman worse. I think they should just make everything else a little bit better.
Yeah,
especially since, you know, we should be getting an expansion in a couple of months anyway, right? Like usually December-ish.
Priest?
Hopefully around BlizzCon.
They're hinting that Priest is going to get a lot of stuff possibly, so I'm excited. I'm excited.
Looking at how Shaman is now, I'm just not excited about Priest nurse. I'm scared of them.
It's going to be like...
I'm terrified of Priest buffs.
You get to choose what you resurrect for the entire game, and it's a one-minute...
Yeah, he still is.
It's a one-minute 1-3 legendary that lets you pick your resurrects.
Man, all right. And, God, you guys, man, just breaking, just downers, man.
Wait, it's going to be a 2-2-4.
They will. History shows us that when they've said that they're going to try and buff a class out of the gutter, they've made it too strong.
Too strong,
Paladin sucked. And they're like, we're going to make Paladin better. And then everyone's Paladin, guys. This is awful. And then they're like, well, Shaman sucks. We'll make Shaman better. Then everyone was like, this is awful. Shaman.
But even given the record, have we ever seen Priest in that top spot, though? I don't think we've
Do we ever want to with how they do it? Like,
if they had learned from their mistakes that they've made with Paladin and Shaman, or maybe they weren't mistakes, maybe those things drove sales of that class through the roof.
So much higher,
they made a ton of money off of it, and it's great, and they want to continue doing it. Like, who knows? We have no idea. But if that's the case, and they make Priest super OP, and then everyone has to buy Priest cards, it could be extremely sad and depressing, and we might all just lose to heal pass and control.
I would like that part. I could heal pass my way to victory.
Heal pass. Let the light shall burn you.
And at the end, it's like deal one damage for each time you use your hero power and did nothing. It's like you just one shot the guy.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Justin Mann asks, what if every month or two a cycled out set got cycled back in to shake up the meta between expansions?
Shake ups.
Or just shake up?
You what, mate? You're gonna Paladin shake, Shredder and Dr. Boom. I mean, there's no shake up.
It's my god!
We already know which cards are like so much more powerful in those sets than the ones we have right now. So you just sub out 4 drops for Shredder, and you sub out 7 drops for Boom, and that's your shake up. I mean, I don't know if I'm right, but it just feels like
that changes more things.
Sure.
If there's one change, like all of a sudden, if Shredder and Boom are good, it makes other cards worse, right? Like Shredder beats up on Tomb Pillagers, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
One change causes more cascade.
But like, is the cascade so wide that it would?
Well, I think
it's always interesting.
I would dig it just because I get bored really quickly of Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Like whenever I play, I'm scouring the internet for information. I'm playing a ton myself, and then all of that information compiled kind of comes up with whatever the tier one deck lists are between me and the group of 150 other Hearthstone players that I talk to on a daily basis, you know, and we figure out what the good decks are pretty quickly. So if it's changing every single month, then I get to do that every single month. And just it's really Brawl, fun dude. And entertaining time for me.
No, well,
the problem with Tavern Brawl is there's no accomplishments for that, and oftentimes the challenges are nothing similar to what I'm talking about.
I agree.
I think the shakeup is good, like every once or one or 2 months, but I think if you were to do it in the form of bringing old sets back, they'd have to go and, you know, nerf and balance some of those cards again, because Pilot Shredder's always been overpowered. Dr. Boom has always been overpowered. So,
like, super overwhelming for new players. I don't know. Like, I'm pretty sure that would drive people away if they're like, "What? I got to buy all these cards, and I got to buy all these old cards if I want to compete in the format." And then it switches out. Now I got to buy these cards, and the people that haven't been here from the beginning are just like, "I have to drop like $1,000 if I want to play this game at a competitive level,
and
be better than like rank 5." So it's like absolutely ridiculous for someone to try and enter the scene at that point, which makes it then unrelatable to watch the pro scene, which then causes the fall off in viewership all over the place. And I don't think it would be great for the scene in general. I think it would be great for as a perspective of something that I would enjoy doing, but you gotta have doors open for new people to be involved in the scene and for it to be connectable to the average viewer, and I think that would take away too much from that.
Yeah. See, Brett Bellamy asked, do you think upgrading cards that see little play could be a possible way to improve the meta?
I did not hear. You cut out for that whole thing, man.
Do you think upgrading cards that see little play could be a possible way to improve the meta rather than just nerfing?
Upgrading cards that see play?
That don't see play.
I actually think, well, in a way, like nerfing cards does upgrade bad cards, you know, like in a weird way.
The way Hearthstone is like built right now, there are so many cards that are so much better than the average card. Like if you just look across win rates of when you play this card on this mana slot, how often do you win the game sort of thing? Like there's cards like Totem Golem and Fiery War Axe that are just like leagues above every other card in that slot.
Yeah.
So if you were going to bring every single card up to that slot, you would have to change maybe 300 cards in the game. So
right. So I mean that's where the design challenge is right now, in my opinion, is like coming up with very efficient ways to making more cards that are not being played right now better, but without changing those cards themselves. And that's why things from below, you know, like a lot of some of these shaman cards that we talked about, like it's really smart because it's elegant. It's an elegant way to actually improve the power of some of these cards because they won't go back. I would like to see them. I would like to either see
them
nerf a bunch
sets.
Of cards or up the power of a lot of cards, but they won't.
I think it's intentional the way that they've designed it. It can't be an accident that there's certain cards that are better on each mana slot, and it creates variance, which allows new players to win a little bit more often, which, you know, is a whole part of their philosophy of the game being easier to pick up, easy to understand. This card's good. I want this card on this turn. Makes mulligans easier to understand. The game flow, just every part of the game gets easier to understand, I think, when there's core cards that you want on specific mana costs. Yeah. And at the cost of the game, I think being have a lower skill cap, being easier to play, and lowering design space a little bit because things have to interact with those core cards. But I think it's definitely from a design standpoint in their benefit to have the game the way it is, and that's why they've done it by I think they have a ton of research and figured out that people will enjoy this more. The casual player will get more involved if we make these core cards better at certain mana costs. But when you look at the grand scheme of card things, that just factors in, you know, how you have RNG based on every card you draw and RNG in the mulligan. That increases all of that RNG when it comes to competitive play because there's certain cards that, you know, if you draw them on the right mana cost, they're the strongest on that mana cost, that player is off to a huge advantage in the game. And that's kind of the deficit that we're faced with for having a game that appeals to new players. But if it doesn't appeal to new players, there's no competitive scene. There's no viewership
in the
game. Suddenly we're playing chess versus each other and no one's watching and none of us have any money. So I'm really happy with their decision to do it the way that they've done it because that pays my bills. It pays their bills. It gives you free entertainment. So everybody's happy at the end of the day.
Yep.
So I think it's a good decision the way they've done it. I don't personally like it from the enjoyment standpoint, but I understand it.
Wow.
We've
got a presidential candidate on the Regan show today.
What he's saying is he's
you cyber too.
That's really it. Really. If I have to summarize entire points, like so this game sucks, but I got money in the bank. That's literally it.
There we go.
So, I mean, honestly, though, like if I had to give my own short answer to that, it would be I don't mind if they change expansion cards that don't see play because those rotate out, but the core set can't be made to be too good. Like, that's the only fear I have is that they make those core set cards so good that, you know, just like Rockbiter Weapon, for instance, or Warzone Commander in some ways, like they're just plain old too good and forever. And that's the one thing I'd like them not to do is just buff those core cards. But if they want to change expansion cards after they come out, because they, like, let's say they want to see us play like Giant Sandworm for whatever fucking reason, like I don't mind that they change it or they decide
and
to
make it more playable. Sure, yeah. I mean, like, all these content things is good content, man. But right. I agree with you. Yeah, they can't make the core cards oppressive because if the core cards are too good, everyone starts playing the core cards. And if everyone plays the core cards, nobody buys the new cards. If nobody buys the new cards, Blizzard doesn't make any money. Mm-hmm. They're not happy.
Yes. Good for no one.
People get bored watching the game because everyone's playing the same cards, and that's just bad for everybody. So at the end of the day, when Blizzard makes money, it's good for us. When they make change that causes us to play new cards, it's good for us. It's good for the viewers. It's good for everybody. So it is very much in our benefit for the meta be shaken up in positive ways and for the game to be approachable by new players. So that's, I think, the angle they should go for with card buffs or card nerfs. And in the way that the formula they have it set up, that makes it so card nerfs are a more appealing option than card buffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a good point to wrap everything up. It's been a great show. Just big news today, so I was really happy to have you guys on, and Farbet just joining last minute too, like literally five minutes before we set up. So it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Where can people find you, man?
People can find me at firebet.tv or at twitter.com/firebet or twitch.tv/firebet. So you can check me out on all of those. I had a great time on the show. Appreciate you having me on, even though I just woke up right before jumping on. And just saw you just hit me up on Skype, and I was just like, yeah, let's do it, Value Town. I didn't even know new cards were out. I mean, nerves. So it's really cool to be able to talk with you guys.
Awesome. Zalay, how about you, man? Shout-outs, where can people find you?
Yeah, shout-out to Team Luminosity. Check out my stream, twitch.tv/ZalayHS, and also shout-out to Blizzard for listening to the community and making these balance changes. I think they're really positive. I think there's more work that can be done to improve the game, but this is a huge step in the right direction. I'm very happy about it, so thank you, Blizzard.
I haven't even looked on Reddit yet. Is Reddit happy? Please tell me Reddit's just happy.
For sure.
Reddit is never happy.
They have to at least be excited for now until somebody makes the next bad post about how this is really bad.
All right. They do seem pretty happy with the first post I've seen here.
That's good. Noxious, how about you? Shout outs and where can people find you?
Honestly, I'm just going to restrict it to Blizzard this time. Thanks, guys, for doing this before BlizzCon, at least. It's going to be nice to watch the event.
Actually, they're not actually completely happy. Let me interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Go ahead. What's up?
The number one upvoted post on the Reddit thread about the card nerfs is, Yogg is unplayable even in the fun sense. A card that reads 10 mana, skip your turn, and the next one as well isn't fun.
Okay.
This is from people who posting that probably have not even played the new version of it. Gosh. It's funny. Okay. But Noxious, continue. Sorry. We interrupted.
That's it. Just like shout out to Blizzard for doing something very, very positive. I think everybody can get behind with the set. Mm-hmm. Pretty much it. Want to see more nerfs like this in the future. Just like faster nerfs, but shout out for those.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, today is a good day. I think it's one of those things where, if not all, but most of the community, like, I think, feel really good. It's one of those good days that we can really celebrate together, just with this type of change. So, big shout out to you guys, Firebad, Zalay, and Noxious, for doing the show with me. All of you guys for watching too. You can find the VODs on YouTube.com/ChamMV right after the show. Probably, no, not right after, but maybe like 30 minutes after if you miss any of the beginning. Audios will be up tomorrow on iTunes and Google, Android, and all the other the different aggregators you guys might be using, or apps or whatnot for use for podcasts. And anything else? I think that's it. Big shout out to Tempo Storm, obviously, and their sponsors, Twitch, G2A, and Curse for doing it, for sponsoring the show. And I think that's going to be it. Oh, one last thing too, guys. I just a real quick like announcement. I just want to, you know, some of you have been wondering what in terms of like what I was talking about in terms of the events and stuff. So I am going to be bringing Deck Wars back. So, it's like a show match series that I did like a long time ago. But I figured it was a good time to kind of bring it back. So you'll be seeing some of the details of that in the very near future. Any players that are watching, you know, hit me up if you want to be part of that. But I'll definitely be reaching out to a lot of players too.
I want
to
play.
you want to play or you want to cast or what, man? I don't know. Yeah, we're gonna have to figure. We're gonna have to. Figure out what's
play,
what's
play the best. Cast.
All the
you
things.
Play and I'll cast it. And you know, that was just tell, like a
yeah, I'll, no, I'll just talk like, about how man. Good my plays are. Like, wow.
Wow. We'll be showing VODs of
play
delay.
Here by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But I'm trying to come up with a brand new format for everybody, too. So definitely details in the near future. But that's going to be it for Value Town this week, guys. So for Firebat, Delay, Noxious, and myself, Champ MV, we'll see you next week. Later.